Tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, discussing the legendary life of Aretha Franklin, we have WGN's own Dean Richards. And to give us a preview of Jazz Fest coming up this weekend, we have jazz musicians live in studio with inspirational Mary Kate Callahan, who is an Iron Woman Paralympian, Brenda Lang, who is a part of the WTS Summer Program, and CEO of WIT with Rana Bohr from the Instant Alliance, the Chicago Tech Connector at 9:35, Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau at 10:05, and it's Theater Thursday with ConFest, the 6th annual Asian American Theater Conference and Festival happening at 10:35. But now, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio here in Chicago, here is your host, Andrea Darlis.
In the greatest city in the world. Patty Vasquez Show with me, Andrea Darlis. Dean Richards joins me in studio tonight to talk about the Queen of Soul. Dean,
that's
a
lot of production to start the show.
I know, right? Michael does a great job, doesn't he?
Wow.
Isn't that good? We love Michael.
I don't want to go back to my own show now.
Killing it, right? Killing it. I know you have been talking about Aretha Franklin all day, and I so appreciate you coming in, Dean. But, you know, the Queen of Soul, you have some great stories that you've been sharing, great pictures that you've been putting on WGN-TV and on your Facebook.
Like I said, a few minutes ago, I've gone through so many different emotions today about this, because when we knew that Aretha was going to pass away soon. When they announced on Monday that she was in hospice care in her home. Generally, that means a day, a couple of days, two, 3 days at the most.
Yeah.
And family members, normally in a case like this, for somebody this high profile, they just don't say anything.
Right.
But people close to the family were saying it's going to be today. It's a very, very grave condition. Reverend Jesse Jackson, lifetime friends with her. Went to see her this week. Stevie Wonder, lifetime friend with her, went to see her this week. People were going to say their goodbyes to Aretha Franklin. So it was obvious that it was coming this week. And, you know, you prepare as much as you possibly can when you're covering entertainment, with it. But you still want to be sensitive about
the whole story.
So,
and you so were, Dean. I know early on you were one of the first to report that she was gravely ill. You handled it so beautifully and were very sensitive to the family. Because I know you and Jennifer Hudson were talking about it earlier.
We talked about it. Jennifer, who is the name that comes up most often in the who will play Aretha Franklin in the movie that someday will be made on this subject. She didn't want to talk about the subject. She thought it was
too soon,
premature, because Aretha hadn't passed yet.
Yeah.
But I've gone through periods of great sadness, because Aretha Franklin definitely is one of my favorite performers.
Yeah.
I've gone through this wonderful celebratory feeling today also. In watching, I must have watched 500 video snippets over the last couple of days of performances and interviews, some of which I did, some of, other interviews that people have done that really captured who Aretha Franklin was, both as a performer and as a person. And you want to talk about somebody who broke the mold. We're talking, the early 60s for Aretha Franklin as a young woman coming up in the church and singing gospel music with her father in the church, and somebody giving her a break. And she goes to cut a record, and it becomes a minor hit. And she goes to cut another record, and it becomes a bigger hit. And then she cuts R-E-S-P-E-C-T, and it becomes one of her two charted number one songs on the Billboard charts. She's had many, 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 many top 10 hits. I don't have all the stats in front of me right now, but interestingly, only two number one songs on the Billboard charts.
How about that? Isn't that interesting?
They break the charts down in so many different ways now. But overall number one hits, it was R-E-S-P-E-C-T, Find Out What You Mean to Me.
Right.
And the duet that she did with George Michael, I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
Oh, that was a number one.
That was her other number one song.
Wow, and I know she did a duet with Annie Lennox that went to, I want to say, number two. Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves.
Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves.
That went up to number two.
Yeah.
But again, all these songs you're saying, Dean, I thought they'd all be number one. You know, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, all the different songs that she's done.
Yeah, some of them, I don't think chart position is necessarily a huge indicator of the success of these the performer. These Aretha Franklin songs. I mean, when you think about Respect, this song, that came out in 1967, was about it was a woman. It was an African American woman.
Yes.
Who was saying, and it was in the middle of the civil rights, some of the hottest days of the civil rights issues in America, in which a woman was standing up and saying, I want respect.
Absolutely.
I demand respect like everybody else demands respect. So, and it was speaking to people in so many different ways, and so did her songs. I just even thinking about the song that she did, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Mm-hmm.
That she sang a couple of years ago at the Kennedy Center Honors to Carole King. It's a song that Carole King wrote.
Yes, which I didn't realize until I saw Carole.
Right. Well, at the Kennedy Center Honors, they have people come out and honor that person with performing their work. And it looked like nobody was more surprised to see Aretha Franklin come out on stage
than Carole King.
Than Carole King was.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh because she came on stage looking pretty healthy. This was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about her illness and the cancer in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But she's been dealing with pancreatic cancer for quite some time. But so when she did this Kennedy Center Honor, she looked pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And she sounded amazing. But she walks out on that stage in a big old fur coat.
Yes.
With her purse.
Yes, yes. I remember that.
Because Ray Charles used to talk about this all the time, too, that he wasn't going to leave anything valuable backstage.
Right.
Because, they came up through the School of Hard Knocks.
Sure,
where people would steal your things if you left them in the dressing room.
Right.
So she took her fur coat and her purse with her on stage, and she knocks out this unbelievable version of You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman that I must have watched that 25 times this week.
Mm-hmm.
I am not exaggerating. I'm not embarrassed to say I break down in tears every time I hear this song. It is so beautiful.
It is. It's a goosebump moment. I saw her twice. The first time I ever saw her, I was about 25 years old at the Holiday Star Theater in Merrillville.
Wow.
And again, 25, out of college, went with some friends, wore in jeans and a t-shirt. You want to talk about the most underdressed people on the planet.
No, I mean, people get dressed up to come to an Aretha Franklin show.
Seriously, Dean, we're talking gold lamé, beautiful dresses with matching purses.
That's what I wore.
And I thought, wow. You're right, though. She just commands the respect when she's on that stage. She just, it's a goosebump
moment. It's goosebump inducing. The way I'm reminded of this because I was watching some Tony Bennett concert footage also, who's going to be at Ravinia in early September.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with somebody about Tony Bennett, of how he just doesn't sing a song. He's not just a singer who's on key with the song. He interprets the song.
Yeah.
He makes you feel the meaning of the song. And that's what Aretha Franklin did. She was an interpreter of, that's why I think the chart positions, whether a song got to number one or almost all of her songs were in the top 10 for sure. But chart position aside, she made you feel those songs.
Oh, absolutely.
You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, Chain of Fools.
Oh, God, yeah.
Call Me, some of her, more recent things. Freeway of Love was actually the first time, that was 1984.
Love that song.
That was the first time that I ever saw her because, she was riding the waves of music.
Sure.
And music changed quite a bit in the late 70s. Disco came in and dance music came in and, she was... she wasn't technically a Motown performer. She was actually on Atlantic Records, but she was of that era. And she redefined herself and came out with this song, Freeway of Love, which was a huge hit song. And of all the places that a legend like Aretha Franklin would perform It was at the Intimate Park West.
One of my favorite seats. Places to see
800
a show.
Seats.
Yeah.
And I told a friend, it's like, we have to go see Aretha Franklin. She's at the Park West. When are you going to see somebody like Aretha Franklin in a venue like that? And she blew the roof off of the joint. Everybody just had such a great time. The last time now that I saw her was in 2009. It was at the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond. I interviewed her that day. That's the picture that I posted on my Facebook and Twitter pages today.
That's a great picture.
Where we had a wonderful conversation. It's in her dressing room.
Yes.
This just shows you what a professional she is. And, some people need a lot of preparation and they want nobody in the dressing room before they go on and they have all these demands. Aretha, I walk in and they put out a little fruit table and, snacks and things in the dressing rooms before the performers go on. Honey, before we start, can I fix you a plate of something? It's like you're visiting your aunt.
Your mom, right.
What can I get for you before we sit down? And, in my mind, I'm going, Aretha Franklin is offering to fix me a plate. I cannot believe this.
A fruit plate. That's so cool.
But we had a lovely conversation. The conversation ended, and within 2 minutes, she was on stage and blowing the roof off that joint.
It's an amazing memory. And I want to know, too, Dean, I want to talk with you briefly as well. I know you say Freeway of Love, who's Zoomin' Who. I don't even want to say she reinvented herself for all these different decades and generations, but her music clearly holds up through time. You know, all of these songs I love. We can probably mouth the words to half of them or sing along with half of them.
Yeah.
But anybody, Rihanna, Beyonce is dedicating her concert tonight. All of them, not just R&B singers and black females. I would say
Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney did today. Paul McCartney tweeted a beautiful memorial message about her today. Everybody, anybody who is in music is today. Barack and Michelle Obama each issued beautiful, very heartfelt statements. President Trump issued a beautiful statement, thankfully, about Aretha Franklin today. I mean, everybody has talked about how their music affected, how her music affected them in some way. But she was the master of all genres. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just R&B music and pop music that went on the charts. I remember, I think it was 1998, Luciano Pavarotti was supposed to perform at the Grammy Awards. He's a little bit famous for not showing up to things. And people in Chicago who may have bought tickets to some shows that he's had here know exactly what I'm talking about, where he's supposed to do a concert and the last minute cancels. It was a Pavarotti thing. It happened all the time. And on this Grammy performance, Pavarotti was supposed to perform, canceled, and Aretha Franklin stepped in and sang opera and blew the roof off of that joint.
Of course she did.
With no rehearsal, probably a little bit of rehearsal.
But still,
virtually nothing. But, for an R&B singer, a pop singer, basically, to step in, singing opera is a completely different animal than singing pop and R&B and rock.
It absolutely
completely
is.
Different, but she mastered it.
Of course she
gospel
did.
Music is where she came from. That was in her blood.
Yeah.
She famously, she grew up singing in the church, but famously was called upon to sing at the funeral service for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
In 1968. She has performed at three different presidential inaugurals. She sang at the inaugural of Jimmy Carter. She sang at the inaugural of Bill Clinton and
Barack Obama
and Barack Obama's in January of 2009.
Yeah.
I interviewed her in April of 2009. And, one of the things that we talked about was how moving it was for her as an African-American woman to be asked to participate in the inauguration of America's first African-American president.
Wow.
And how moving it was for her. Slash, if you remember, 2009, she had that big, gigantic hat on. Do you remember that? With the big bow on it.
Yes.
And everybody was talking about Aretha's hat. And, I brought up in the conversation, I said, are you surprised how much people are talking about the hat? And she started laughing. She goes, I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. She said, I've always loved hats. And I didn't even think about it. But she said, this hat needs a press agent. This hat's way more popular than I am.
She is the best. We are remembering the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, with Dean Richards. And we're going to talk about Aretha's legacy coming up after this on 720 WGN. 728, we continue to talk about the Queen of Soul. That was 86?
1986. You were waiting for me.
Knew you were See, this is my era. This is how I learned about Aretha, through these songs, and then went back to RESPCT.
Freeway of Love.
Yep.
Pink Cadillac.
We going riding on the freeway.
She redid the Bruce Springsteen song.
She did it much better than I did.
Rock Steady. Chain of Fools, Say a Little Prayer for You.
Oh, Say a Little.
You better think. How about her role in the Blues Brothers movie?
Oh, my God. Iconic. You have to hang just for a few seconds, so because we have to touch on some of this, too. We're talking to Dean Richards, of course, from Channel 9 and WGN Radio here as well. Becky is calling in to talk to us, Dean. 312-981-7200 is our number. Becky, you actually worked with Aretha?
I actually was working for Festivals Incorporated that ran Chicago Fest. And in 1981, Miss Franklin was one of the headliners, and I was running the backstage. I was outside. We had trailers. One had food, and one was for the private, you know, for the different musicians. And Miss Franklin came out of her trailer in what I would consider houseware with some sort of a slip-on slipper. All of a sudden, we heard clicking, lots of clicking, and she looked, and I looked, even though I was across the way. Cameras were not as quiet as they are now, and someone had snuck in and was taking pictures of her, not in her finest.
Uh-oh.
And she did not yell, she did not scream, she took her incredibly, beautifully manicured nail, pointed to the man who was standing outside her trailer, pointed at the photographer, and nodded. That guy was smoke. I mean, he was gone. The camera was smashed to pieces.
Right, without making a stink or anything.
Yeah, you don't.
And she just nodded her head and walked back on into the trailer, like, you know, it's taken care of.
Where was Chicago Fest that year? Was it a Navy Pier, or had it moved to the Patrillo?
It was still down on Navy Pier. It was either 80, it wasn't 80, but I believe it was 81 or 82. I worked all those years for Festivals Incorporated. And I'm going to throw in my favorite song, which is Till You Come Back to Me.
Yeah.
Oh,
that one. And the hat is in the Smithsonian.
Oh, it is in the Smithsonian?
From there. But I also want to throw in one thing. I was blessed to get into a private event that had Miss Franklin and Ray Charles together.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
It was a small room. Wow. It was a private corporate event. And I just sat there with my mouth hanging open. They were both together, but I have to tell you, the stories you've been talking about and the clips you've been talking about, the minute I heard she was ill, I've posted those on my website, the Nessa Dorme, the everything, and I cried in the middle of work today. I'm not going to lie.
Well, we have a lot of clips
for
up
the call
at WGNTV.com.
Yeah.
Some of my interview clips that I had with her are there. But some of her famous performances are all there. And talk about her illness. You know, it's been probably about 2 or 3 years now where it's been rumored that she was suffering with cancer. She never talked about it.
No.
She was always very upbeat about the whole thing. And really, it wasn't until today when they announced the cause of her death, pancreatic cancer, that there was any acknowledge that. But she left us an incredible legacy.
She did.
Wonderful music. She lived life like a queen.
Yeah.
She left us in a regal, dignified, wonderful,
yeah, she did.
Queen-like manner that deserves nothing but respect.
Absolutely.
So, you know, while we're sad that she's gone, her legacy will certainly continue forever.
Absolutely. The memories will. Dean, thank you for hanging out for a while. And again, go to WGNTV.com to see your pictures, your clips, your stories, and it's wonderful.
Yeah,
so
we'll
thank
have more
you
tomorrow morning on TV also.
Excellent. Dean, thank you so much, and we'll be back after this with the news on WGN. Sad news, Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, passed away today at the age of 76. We'll be playing Aretha Franklin music throughout the show. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with me, Andrea Darlis. Patty's on vacation, and we have exciting, exciting folks in studio again. Mary May with the City of Chicago is here with the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. I know you were just here talking Air and Water Show, which is this weekend. But we said, as long as we have you, we want to talk some Jazz Fest.
That's right. The Chicago Jazz Fest starts August the 24th, early this year.
Yeah, it is early this year.
We've added a couple more days, so it's August the 24th through September the 2nd, and it's part of it's most of it's going to be in Millennium Park, but we're moving into the neighborhoods.
Right, and I don't want to say the final, because the festivals go on all year round and whatnot, and for the holidays too, but one of the big final summer festivals, it always ends with the Jazz Fest. So
yes,
it's a great way to...
I think a lot of people see that as the last, you know, grand finale of the summer.
Right. I think so, too. Ivy Hall is here. She's the Jazz Fest coordinator, also with the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. Ooh, that's a long title. What do you just call yourself?
Princess of DKs.
Okay, there you go. Mary's like, that's news to me. But so this is cool. So I was just asking Mary now off the air, does every festival have its own coordinator? And the answer is yes, but you also do Gospel Fest.
Yes. So we have a great team of programmers. Gospel Music Festival is my other festival. And on Jazz Fest, my co-coordinator is Frayne Lewis.
Okay.
Who's also a musician in his own right. But yeah.
I remember, okay, I truly remember when these festivals used to be maybe a block long, or, you know, and now they've expanded. And you said last year or a few years ago, they expanded from Grant Park and Petrillo into Millennium Park. So now you have different stages as well. And now they're going into the neighborhoods.
We're moving on into the neighborhoods. Ivy can really speak a little bit to that. But yeah, we've moved out to some of the clubs and venues in the neighborhoods, bringing in more artists and really, you know, spreading the love around. Because, you know, Chicago is, we're ground zero for jazz, blues, gospel, house.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
We are all encompassing. Do you find, and this is maybe... Maybe I shouldn't ask you this because I know we feel the same way about the city, but Chicago just does it right. I mean, we do Jazz Fest right.
Absolutely.
And how so? Tell me some of the artists that we're going to have performing this year.
So we are lucky in that we have Chicago's own Ramsey Lewis, who actually announced his retirement.
Yeah.
And so this is his last show performing in Chicago live before he retires.
Is it really? Because I know Ramsey has said that in the past, but he's not really gonna stop performing, is he?
This is his last show in Chicago.
Okay, good. But what a way to end it, you know, because he started, you know,
absolutely,
the whole jazz movement here.
Absolutely. And we've got Kurt Elling, Diane Reeves, Maceo Parker, just those are some really amazing artists too. And we've also got a lot of local jazz artists that are on our other stages. We've got the Von Freeman Pavilion and the Jazz and Heritage stage that have a lot of local artists.
And it's free?
It's,
I mean,
all
come
free.
On.
That's, yeah,
the
free
best
admission.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
That's the best part of what the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events does, is we provide these free performances and activities, and so that people that wouldn't normally be able to afford to hear these kind of artists can come right down to our beautiful parks and hear them for free.
That's the thing, too. And the artists, do they feel that way, too? I know Ramsey's a local guy at his own radio show. In fact, his producer was one of our part-time producers and news reporters as well,
yeah,
Bob Kessler. But
I think so. You know, I'd also like to think that, you know, we have such... Millennium Park is, you know, just second to none. It's just a venue that's it's magnificent, and artists love to perform there, and people love to come there, and just it's just a beautiful setting, and it's right in the heart of downtown on the lakefront.
Oh, absolutely. And we're so excited to have in our studio too. We have some performers. You guys brought some of the jazz musicians in: Morgan Pirtle, Simon DeFore, and Aaron Day. Thanks you guys for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Just lean on up into there. Now how exciting is this here? Lean up right up in there. How exciting is this for you guys to be performing in Millennium Park as part of Jazz Fest?
It's super exciting. I mean, I've gone to Jazz Fest since I can remember, so, and I've worked it for the past 3 years, so just being able to actually be on stage in front of all of these jazz fans and tourists who are just experiencing the music is going to be really exciting.
Is it really cool? I mean, you're very young anyway, but I used to go with my parents to all these festivals too as a kid, and to watch it grow over the years and now expand into the neighborhoods, what does that mean to you?
I mean, it just shows the impact of this music on Chicago as a whole, and I mean, it's been around for so long and it's still alive and well, so it's really important.
Will you guys play for us?
Yeah.
Okay,
we'd love to.
Do you need a countdown or just... Is there a group name, or are you guys just signing Aaron and Morgan?
We are Morgan Pirtle plus five, and we will be performing on September 2nd on the rooftop stage, the Young Lions stage.
So. Very nice. Okay, plus five. You just have the plus two.
We got plus two today.
Okay, plus two. Right. That's okay. All right, Morgan, take it away.
So do la da da do. So do la da da da. So do la da 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 da. The leaves of brown came tumbling down. Remember that September. In the rain, the sun went down just like a diamond. That September in the rain. To every word I've ever heard, you whisper. The raindrops seemed to sing a sweet refrain. Though spring is here, to me it's still September. That September in the rains. I do love a so do ba 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 da da ba 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 da da ba 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 da 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 ba da 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 ba 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 sweet ba da ba 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 da da da. Samba do da di da di da di lu va va o pedo son le da va va vo e de de se le va va vo va vo vo ve va va vo e de do se du va vo e de sa da va va vo de po de ve da do la vo le 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 se la do do. Le devil, the devil, let it do, 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 do.
Crowd, wow, you're absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
When did you start singing?
when I was really young.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
My mom's a classical.
Sorry, let me turn you. There you go.
Okay. My reverb.
Your reverb. I know. Yeah. We were riding that a little
Thank
bit.
Thank you. Uh-huh. No, I appreciate
That's okay.
it. My mom is a classical musician, so I've been like listening to music since I was a kid. And then, I don't know, I started doing musical theater in junior high and high school, and I remember my first jazz experience was listening to Ella Fitzgerald's, like, the Christmas albums,
oh,
you know?
Oh, God, I love, you know what, I love her, and I gave a quote from her last night. I said, I love Ella Fitzgerald in so many ways, and she had a quote one time. She said, I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better. But no, she's absolutely wonderful. I could see how, and you sound, that was my first thought. Do you get compared to her a lot?
No, but I definitely can count her as one of the big influences that I have.
You get that bluesy soul to you, too.
Thank you.
So will you play another one for us in a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Sounds good. We'll come back after this. We're talking Jazz Fest, which is going to be, of course, in the city of Chicago in Millennium Park, August 24th through September 2nd. You were listening to Morgan Pearl Plus Two.
Yes.
More after this on 720 WGN. 7:54 on 720 WGN. That's Aretha Franklin. Maybe a nice little tie-in. We're celebrating Jazz Fest, which is August 24th through September 2nd in Millennium Park. Mary May and Ivy Hall with the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events here as well. And this is a very special year for the Jazz Fest. You're doing certain things for the young jazz musicians.
Yeah, so all year we've been celebrating Year of the Creative Youth, and in keeping with the festival's tradition and with the celebration of the Year of the Creative Youth, we will have on Saturday and Sunday rooftop jazz. On Saturday, we will have the Jazz Young Lions stage, and it is select groups from citywide jazz band competition that was co-hosted by the Chicago Jazz Institute. And then on Sunday, we have Next Gen Jazz featuring up-and-coming Chicago musicians like Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan, you're awesome. I like when you say when you're younger, you know, which was probably like a few years ago. You just have an amazing voice. Texts are pouring in. Nora Jones. Do you get that a lot? You sound like Nora Jones.
I've definitely heard that before. Yeah, I love Nora, so she's definitely an influence.
Well, your voice is just velvety. It's beautiful.
Thank
Will you sing again for us?
Yeah.
Okay, it's Morgan Pirtle, Simon DeFore, and Aaron Day, part of the Morgan Pirtle Plus Five.
Suddenly, quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and the window looking out on a Corcovado. Oh, how lovely, this is where I wanna be, here with you so close to me until the final flicker of life's ember. Who was lost and lonely, believing that my life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found with you the meaning of existence, oh my love. Quiet nights of quiet stars, chords, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and the window looking out onto Corcovado. Oh, how lovely. This is where I wanna be, here with you, so close to me, until the final flicker of life's ember. I who was lost and lonely, believing that my life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found with you the meaning of existence. Oh my love, oh my love, oh.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful velvet voice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Simon and Aaron for your back, your for the accompanying vocal, the accompanying I'm so blown away, sax and guitar. So thank you very much, Morgan. Go to Jazz Fest, August 24th through September 2nd. Mary and Ivy, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you for bringing us wonderfully and talented musicians, and we appreciate it. Morgan Pirtle, Plus Five. See him at Jazz Fest coming up in next weekend. And more after this on WGN. Ten in the evening. Oh, listen to this. Beautiful. Could listen to Aretha all night. Couldn't you, Michael? We are remembering Aretha Franklin all night long, playing a few of her hit songs and all of her songs through the evening. Queen of Soul passing away at the age of 76 this morning. Our thoughts and prayers go out to all of her family and friends and everybody. But what a legacy that she leaves. And speaking of legacy, our next guest is inspirational, motivational, to say the very least. Mary Kate Callahan is an elite paratriathlete. She's finished 3 Chicago marathons, qualified for Boston, and just found out last week that your event, the paratriathlon wheelchair, will be included in the 2020 Summer Paralympics in Tokyo. So it's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm super excited.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's going to be a great night.
Tell us now, I introduced you as being inspirational and motivational, and our mutual friend Tracy has put us in touch with each other. Tell us about yourself.
My name is Mary Kate Callahan. I'm a Chicago native, grew up in Western Springs. At 5.5 months old, I had a virus that went to my spinal cord and left me paralyzed from originally the neck down. After about 1.5 years of physical therapy, I regained most of the function in my hands and left me. Now I'm like a T9, T10 paraplegic, but I say I've done more on 4 wheels than I would have ever done on 2 feet. I had an older brother. My parents raised me to be as independent as possible, and I think that's one of the greatest gifts they could have ever given me, because of my independence, I've been able to do everything I have been able to do. Grew up with a big family besides my brother, grew up with lots of cousins who are all really involved in sports, and as a little 6-year-old, I wanted to be involved in sports just like them. So my parents got me involved in an able-bodied swim team. Was never really the first one. I was never winning, I would say, but really just wanted to push myself as to be the best I could be. And that kind of started my love for sport. And it's taken me all around the world. You name the sport, I've probably tried it. But in high school, I went to Fenwick High School and participated on the high school swim team. And during that, I also sued the Illinois High School Sports Association because they were not allowing athletes with disabilities to compete for their high school teams.
Unbelievable. And what year was this?
This was in 2012.
Right. Which you'd think in 2012, really?
Yeah, I mean, as a 16-year-old, I never thought I'd be in a room for a deposition, but it was something I believed in so strongly. And I never wanted any other kid to be pushed to the sideline because of their disability. And that was really the first time in my life I was being told no because of my disability. And I wanted to fight for equal rights, and that's exactly what we did. So with the backing of the Illinois Attorney General, as well as Corporate Equality, We sued them. 4 years later, we were able to settle. But that experience, as tough as it was, it was so meaningful. And to see the these kids now racing in these state meets and qualifying for these state meets.
Because of an action that you took. I mean, that has to make you feel good. Did you think at the age of 16, because most 16-year-olds or most teenagers in general, most anyway, if you say, no, you can't do this, okay. And then you just kind of pick up and walk away. But you said no. No does not mean no in this case.
Right. You know, with law and legal cases, you never know when something's going to be settled. And I knew there was a big possibility I was never going to get the chance to benefit from this lawsuit, but that didn't matter to me. I wanted these kids to really be able to be the athletes they could be. And, you know, I think sport helps with so many other aspects of life. And just being able to be part of your high school team is so important. And I think not only for them, but for their classmates or for their teammates, they really are able to benefit from just having someone with a disability on their team. They're being educated just as much as these other athletes are really benefiting from that. So it was exciting to see.
And plus, this is the life you've always known. And you always said, I can.
Right.
You know, no was never an option for you. How did you get involved in sports so young?
Just like being in the class, I was the only student with a disability in my school. So my friends, you know, were at recess or at lunch talking about their soccer games or their swim meets. And, you know, I went home to my parents and said, I want to swim or I want to play basketball. And they figured out a way for me to do that. And it started with being on an able-bodied team. And then a couple years later, I found the disabled athletic world. And that really started like my competitive athletic journey.
And how did your friends treat you too? Just as one of the team?
Oh yeah. Just like everyone else. Like, we were flying around the parking lot, playing tag and
right.
Never wearing my seatbelt when I was little. Don't tell my mom that.
I know.
But,
right. We all did that.
But you know, I think looking back, I think my friends were able, they never saw me in a wheelchair. They saw me as a little redhead with freckles. So, yeah, it's neat to see them now, like, interact with other people with disabilities. And
how about your family, too? That sounds like you had a real good support staff growing up.
Definitely. My family's one of the best, and lucky to have them on my team.
Brothers and sisters?
Yeah, an older brother.
Okay. And he, of course, was probably, like, ribbing you all along,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
typical brother and sister.
Teasing me, yep.
Yeah. But that's what you want. I mean, that's what you've always known, too.
Yes, I've never wanted to be treated any differently. I think it wasn't until as I grew older that I realized how my story can leave an impact on someone else. And that's, I think, the first time I kind of looked at my story, maybe a little different than someone who might be walking on 2 feet. But it was really just to share my story in hopes to benefit someone else. To share some knowledge with them.
Absolutely. How did you think, okay, you know what? I'm going to participate in a marathon. I mean, most people in general, whether you're, you know, handicapable, able to not, I mean, running a marathon or participating in a marathon is just remarkable in itself. How'd you get interested in that?
Yeah, so my junior year of high school, I found the sport of triathlon, an endurance sport, swim, bike, and run. I'd done track, I'd swam, and I'd biked, so why not put them all three together and just do a triathlon? And then leading into Rio 2016, we found out that my classification was not going to be in the games. So that meant it was not going to be a medal event.
This is your sport, right? The
triathlon.
Triathlon, yep. Was not going. How come? Do we know why?
Each sport only gets a certain number of medals. And with Paralympic sport, there's different classifications for every sport.
Okay.
So it was up to the International Paralympic Committee to decide which classifications were going to be medal events. So unfortunately, the women's wheelchair classification was cut from the 2016 games for the sport of triathlon, along with a couple other classifications.
Okay.
So that's when I decided I still love sport for what it is. Yes, 2016 might not be at the end of the tunnel, but I'm not going to let it like push me away from the sport. So that's when I got involved in marathons and Ironman.
I know I introduced you as an Iron. Can I say, is it Ironman or Iron Woman?
I say Ironman.
Okay, so it's just the general classification is Ironman.
Yep.
Okay, again, Ironman. I hear the word and I cringe because I think there is no way I could ever do that. Again, so I mean, just remarkable.
Thank you. I think people look at me when I, like, four eyes when I say, oh yeah, it was really fun. Like, Iron Man fun.
Exactly.
Like, you're out there for 13 and a half hours, but, you know, the community you have there, I mean, you're out there with 2,500 other athletes that want to do an Ironman, and, you know, there's something else in them besides wanting to be an athlete, something else that motivates them. Everyone, each and every one of them has their own story of why they're there and why they're racing, and I think that's what pushed me out on that course. It took me 13 hours and 53 minutes to complete, but everyone's story that I was racing with is what got me from the start to the finish line. And besides the hours and hours of training,
I was going to say, I want to talk about your training too.
Yeah.
We're talking to elite paratriathlete Mary-Kate Callahan, and we're going to talk about your training. We're going to talk about the Clada Foundation as well, which, again, remarkable. You have a foundation, and more with Mary-Kate after this on 720 WGN. We are remembering the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, passing away today at the age of 76. What a legacy that she has left. And speaking of legacy, we're talking to Mary-Kate Callahan, an elite paratriathlete. You know, when I was trying to think of your title, there's so many things, there's so many accolades, your resume, your old, can I say how old you are?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you're 22. You've done more in 22 years than I think most people have done, you know, at any age. Let's start with 40 or so. And do you realize the mark that you're leaving and that you've left?
I do, and I look back and sometimes I'm like, pump the brakes, Mary-Kate, but
you have so much energy. You got back last night at midnight from the Caymans.
I did. I was out helping at a scuba and leadership program for youth with physical disabilities called Stay Focused, and getting to work with that next generation is something I enjoy so much, and something that means the most. So whenever opportunities like this come up, I always try to jump at it, because I think we can give these kids like so much confidence and really show them that they have the potential to make an impact and make a difference in this world despite whatever they're dealing with, and really show them that their story is so important, and really just to teach them how to pull their triumphs out of their story and then learn from their struggles and become better people because of it.
What is Stay Focused? Talk a little bit about
it. So Stay Focused is an organization that was founded in 2003. You know, the water is so freeing for someone with a physical disability. You're weightless in the water. You're not in your wheelchair. You're not in a prosthetic. You're not using crutches. And Stay Focused found this really large benefit of being in the water scuba diving when you have a physical disability. So Roger Mueller started Stay Focused back in 2003 to bring kids out to Cayman to get certified as scuba divers, but also to go through some leadership programming, teach them about independence, teach them about advocacy. And at the end of the program, they become certified scuba divers.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I was involved in the program when I was a kid and benefited from it tremendously, learned so much, met some phenomenal other kids, and still so close with them. And then Roger had asked me to come back kind of as a mentor to these kids. So now I'm a certified scuba diver. I can help them with their certification, but also just be someone that they can bounce ideas off of, ask questions, really just someone who's grown up with their physical disability, gone to college, graduated, now working, and they can see what they can be in a couple of years. And so yeah, I had a blast with these kids. Never forgot how much energy kids have. I mean, we were going.
We say that about you, by the way, about with your energy. But was swimming one of the first sports that you really started enjoying? Because
yep.
It said at a very early age you started swimming as part of aquatherapy.
Yes. So yeah. My parents got me involved in aquatherapy shortly after onset of transverse myelitis. And, you know, I was the kind of the fish out of water. Who would enjoy therapy? But they put me in the water and I never wanted to leave. So, that's, I think, swimming will always be my, like, true love in sport. Yeah, got involved in swimming and, you know, still swim when I'm racing triathlons. So.
Oh, God. And I love how you just talk about it. Like, yeah, when I race triathlons. Talk about the training for a triathlon, because obviously a lot of heart and soul and sweat goes into this.
Definitely. And a little, some blood, too. But, you know, that's
only
when you crash.
Shh, don't tell the people trying to get involved.
But, yeah, I mean, the training, what I love most about triathlon, it's swim, bike, run. Every training day is different. You might be doing two. You might be doing all three disciplines. But the room for improvement is infinite. Like, you can, you're constantly improving. And I think that's what I love most about elite sport, is you're never going to have a perfect race. You're never going to have a perfect training center, but you're going to learn something about yourself in every single training session or in every single race. And I'm someone who is constantly wanting to grow, is constantly wanting to learn, who has like a really, who's eager to learn. And so I think that's what's kept me in the sport, but also the people around the world who I've met through the sport, who they've who's each and every one of them has had their own story, but despite their story, they've found sport and are now competing at one of the biggest stages in the world for a sport. What's elite? So I have my elite professional triathlon card. So you earn your card based on your world ranking, okay. And how you perform at races.
So you have to, the more you perform, the more your rank.
Yeah. So I race in the international triathlon circuit. So it's a series of races that go towards your world ranking. And at the end of the season, your world ranking is what gets you into world championships, which I'll be leaving for in about 4 weeks exactly.
I thought you'd probably say 4 hours. You're out. You're on to your next venture.
No. Still haven't unpacked from yesterday. Right. So hopefully I get a little more time. But yeah, no. So world championships are a month from yesterday.
Okay.
So I'll be traveling down to Gold Coast, Australia to compete at the ITU Paratriathlon World Championships. So I'm super excited. I raced on that course April of 2017.
Okay.
And amazing course, amazing country.
Yeah,
we're excited to get back there now for one of our biggest races of the season.
That's quite a trip.
Yes.
Quite a trip. We're going to talk to you about that right after this on 720 WGN. We continue with the program talking to elite paratriathlete Mary Kate Callahan. And you're so inspirational. One of the first athletes with a disability in Illinois history to compete at a state championship swim meet in high school. You also represented the United States as the youngest member of Team USA and in 2012 and 2014 World Triathlete Championships. Also selected to represent Team USA in the 2018 ITU World Triathlon Grand Final in Queensland, Australia. And that's where you're going to be heading next month again.
I know. I can't believe it. I found out on Monday and here we are. Going there, leaving September 8th. So it's amazing logistic-wise what you can throw together in 48 hours. But these races, you don't find out if you could make the start list until 32 days before.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's always a little bit of a hurry up and get this together.
Especially when you're truly going halfway across the world. Talk about what it's like. The trip itself to Australia is long. It's a 24-hour flight, 18 hours if you fly from L.A. So that alone has got to be tough on an athlete's body.
We're definitely hard to miss in the airport, you know, with racing, triathlon, swim, bike, and run. I have my everyday wheelchair that I get around with. I have my wetsuit and all that. I have my hand cycle that I ride the bike part of the triathlon with. And then I have my racing wheelchair, which is what I do the run part of a triathlon with. But then I have race wheels for all the bikes.
You have to check all of this? Okay.
And then I have spare wheels for all of this. So it is a Mary Kate Callahan circus going through the airport.
We have
a great support staff. The U.S. brings a great support staff, but I also travel with like a handler. It's usually my dad. It's really cool. My dad and I have been able to travel to a lot of races together because the wheelchair classification is allowed to have one person in the transition area with them.
Okay.
And this person is there to help get wetsuits off. To get in and out of bikes, because in triathlon, your transition time counts. And we've had a lot of races come down to who was out of transition first.
Really?
So, my dad's been able to travel with me to a lot of races. He'll be coming to Australia with me. So it's been cool to see the world through doing something I love and then with just an awesome team and great support staff. So we're excited to head back to Australia. Fingers crossed that all the equipment gets there safe.
Yes.
That's one of the hardest things is when you hand over your equipment, you're like, this is the equipment I need when I get there, but it's totally out of my control if it gets there safe. So you try to put as much bubble wrap and foam in the bags as possible. But
do you get there 32 days before, or do you get there longer than that to try and transition yourself and your body, because you're going to a whole different country and a whole different part of the world?
Yeah, so the start lists come out 32 days before.
Okay.
But we won't get to Australia until September 10th, and then we race on September 15th.
Okay, so you find out and then you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually for world championships, we get there a little earlier than normal. If it was just like a world paratriathlon series race, the travel time and the time we're there isn't as long, because usually we get there, we race, we get back, because we're starting another training cycle before the next race.
And you said you did that in 4 days last time?
Yeah, so I was in college when I raced back in Australia last time. I was in college and I had my finals. So I had to make that trip so quick. I can't even believe I did that.
I can't either. I mean, the jet lag alone would take you 4 days to get
over. Oh, yeah, I don't think I ever realized I was jet lag. I think I was just running on pure adrenaline and
you're young
some
and
coffee.
You have a ton of energy and coffee, right? What are there? Okay, you're an elite paratriathlon, Paralympian. What type of, I mean, you have to eat healthy. Do you ever splurge? Do you ever just have a pizza or milkshake?
After races, I love milkshake, like ice, some kind of ice cream, some sweet potato fries, a burger.
But when you're training, it's all...
Yeah, yeah. I try to eat healthy. My family will make fun of me because I love like my piece of chicken, my broccoli, my sweet potato for dinner,
That's
or my
awesome.
Avocado toast in the morning if we're up at the lake with our family. So, but no, it's living the like an athletic life and just healthy living. I mean, I feel better. It helps me with my energy. But, you know, to be able to compete against the best, you have to train and work towards being the best. So, you know, every little thing you do can affect that race. So try to be as disciplined as possible, but also have fun because...
It's what it's all about.
Yes.
It's what it's all about.
You're more successful when you're having fun, I believe.
I completely agree with you. I want to talk about the Kalata Foundation as well. It was established in 1995 by your uncle and your grandpa.
Yes.
It's kind of neat.
Yes,
and
so neat.
Tell us about the foundation.
So like I said before, I come from a very large family. And after I was diagnosed with transverse myelitis, you know, we all kind of got together and figured out how can we help make this situation better and really make an impact on other people's lives. So my Uncle Jerry and my grandpa started the Kalata Foundation, which raises money for spinal cord research. And we also give grants to organizations that are assisting people with physical disabilities, as well as families and individuals who might need a grant for an accessible van or to have a ramp in their house or an elevator. And, you know, those little things, those pieces of equipment help that individual with physical disability become independent. And like I said before, my independence is something I value so much. And I think my family's been able to see that. And now we want to just give back to other people. So I think the Kalata Foundation is truly a testament to a family coming together as well as the power of people. So it's really one family wanting to help another family through their stories and
you're being
through similarities.
You're being a little modest too. You've raised more than $2 million.
Yeah, it's
from the foundation.
Like I said, I mean, it's run by our family.
Yeah.
When you're passionate about something, it's a success. And we've been lucky enough to have a great family behind us, friends, family, extended friends and family, and really rally around a cause. And like I said, we want to help as many people as we can, and that's exactly what we've done.
And
whether it's through grants or through helping organizations or through giving money to research, to maybe one day find a cure for paralysis and, you know, change the lives of millions. But while they're working on that cure, we can help the people who are living with disabilities.
Absolutely. The Kalata Foundation golf outing is tomorrow night. Now, tickets for the golf outing are sold out, but you can still buy tickets for the dinner.
Yes, we have sold out of golf, but we do have a super fun evening, dinner, drinks, and just good people.
Yeah, and some great auction items, too.
Yeah.
It's Kalata Foundation. It says Kalata.foundation.
Yep, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, very easy, just like the Kalata ring.
Yes.
And you had a cool experience. You got to go to Ireland and go to the...
Yeah, the Kalata Town.
The Kalata Town.
See the original Kalata store.
Oh,
But
cool.
Yeah, I traveled down to Ireland for the first time with my mom, my dad, and then my mom's mom and dad. So it was cool to be there with all of them and really just get to travel around Ireland. I fit right in with all my long lost brothers and sisters who have red hair.
Yes.
We had a great time. So
Mary Kate Callahan, that's Irish, right?
Yeah, just a little.
No, I'm kidding. But that's so cool. You're so inspirational. What would you say? I know you're very involved with Stay Focused. Of course, your foundation as well. But what would you say to young women and of course young boys too going through a similar situation or an experience and someone tells them you can't do it? No. Mm-mm.
That word no just lights a little fire inside of me and really motivates me to prove them wrong and to show them that something is possible. You know, a quote that my parents embedded into my head when I was super young was never, never, never give up. And, you know, there's a lot of things in life that we can control, but there's a lot of things in life we can't control. But when you believe in something so strongly, you're going to persist, you're going to push through it, and you're going to come out on top and really prove to others that you can do something. And it's not going to be it's not always an easy route, but you're going to learn how to adapt and figure out a way to get what you want and to really prove a point. And, I guess my advice was to kids is to do what you love.
Don't let anything hold you back.
No. And have fun. I mean, I think the last 23 years have been so fun for me, and that's allowed me to do what I've been able to do. So.
You have so much energy. You're so positive. I'm going to make you brag. Tell everybody your rank. in the United States right now? Otherwise, I will.
Well, there's three girls in the U.S. right now. So in the world rankings, I'm second.
Yeah.
In the U.S. I'm second in the U.S., but I'm 10th overall.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah. I mean, that has got to make you extremely proud of what you've done. Do you ever just stop and take a breath and think, look what I've done?
Yes, but as an athlete, you want to get be higher in the rankings.
You want to be number one. You're two.
And I mean, especially now with Tokyo on all of our minds.
Yeah.
Our competitive drive is just going up about 100 notches. You know, we didn't know what the outcome was going to be when this decision was made. And I didn't know if my racing career was going to be over on an elite level or not. And I think when I read that article last Monday that, you know, we were in for the games, I got my goosebumps back and I realized a dream that I dreamed of 6-7 years ago that was taken away from me under my feet. And now it's really up to me to prove that I can get one of those spots and race for the U.S. in Tokyo 2020. So I'm going to try to do everything in my power to be there and represent the United States. And, you know, you close your eyes and you think of that moment that you're working so hard for. And, you know, that's what's going to fuel me over the next couple years. And it's not going to be an easy journey. It's not going to come in a matter of seconds. But, you know, every little day and every second and every minute is going to ultimately, hopefully, get me to that goal. So.
Absolutely. Well, we're all supporting you. You got a huge support staff now with all of us and your family and the Kalata Foundation. For more information, people can find out about you, MaryKateCallahan.com or the Kalata.Foundation.
Correct.
Is the Kalata Foundation website. And go USA.
Thank
go
you.
Team
yes,
Mary
yes,
Kate.
Thank
Come
you.
Back and visit us, okay?
Oh, definitely.
Okay,
definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank
and
you.
Have fun in Australia.
Thank you.
All right,
have
more,
a good night.
You too. Thanks again. More after this on WGN. Listen to that. Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, passes away at the age of 76. We continue to pay tribute to her all night long with some of her songs. Well, there's no shortage of things to do in Chicago. There's the Aaron Water Show this weekend. There's Jazz Fest next weekend. And there's also the sixth annual Asian American Theater Conference and Festival, better known as ConFest. And of course, we have one of the board members here and the artistic director, Kyung Park and Jamil Corey. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
All right, tell us about ConFest, because this is my first experience with this.
So CATA is the Consortium of Asian American Theaters and Artists, and ConFest is a biannual national convening of artists and plays and staged readings and sessions devoted to conversations around questions of representation and really expanding the narrative within the American theater.
And Kyung, you are the playwright of Pillow Talk.
Yes.
So what's it like to be a playwright?
Oh.
Tedious, insightful.
It's a vocation, and it's something that I've been doing for over 15 years, but for the past 6 years, I've been directing and producing my own work as artistic director of Kyung's Pacific Beat. It's a Brooklyn-based peacemaking theater company, and we're really excited to be part of CATA with our show Pillow Talk, which is going to have two performances at Victory Gardens tomorrow, Friday and Saturday night.
That's a great theater.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's
absolutely
a fantastic venue. Do you like that venue?
We love it. We just loaded in our show tonight, and it's really exciting to be there.
And that's really cool. I absolutely love it. Now, the theme, Revolutionary Acts, will engage people in passionate dialogue about social injustice and equality. It's probably a perfect time to have this type of theme.
Absolutely. And, you know, when people tell their story and speak from a place of their own truth, they are performing a revolutionary act. And as we look at an evolving American story and a country that is becoming much more inclusive and we hope embracing, despite some of the political backdrop we're operating against, this is really a time for us to come together and perform our individual and collective revolutionary acts of telling our own, you know, claiming our own narratives.
Right, right. And it, as divisive of a time it is, it can be many times, especially in the present day, this is probably a nice way to come together and celebrate the culture. Do you find that too?
Absolutely. And you know, when we're talking about Asian American experience, we're really talking about a breadth of experiences. So Kata has embraced the term Asian American in a very broad sense. So East Asian, Southeast Asian, South Asian, and West Asian. I myself am of part Syrian origin, so I would be part of the West Asian contingent of that.
Kyung, tell us about Pillow Talk. What can people who come to see it, what can they see? What can they expect?
Pillow Talk is an intimate gay bedroom drama about Sam and Buck. Sam is a former African-American Olympic swimmer who's had a fall from grace. And Buck is an Asian-American journalist that is struggling with the bamboo ceiling at work. So the play takes place in their bedroom. It's over one night, and Sam and Buck have an ongoing conversation unpacking the way race, class, and gender has affected their lives, and that is the story that we're telling with Pillow Talk.
Okay, the bamboo ceiling.
Yes.
Is this like the glass ceiling,
exactly,
only with the Asian culture? Okay,
yes.
See how quickly I picked up on that?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yes.
And I'm definitely going to go see Pillow Talk. Explain that a little bit, though. I know you said it a little tongue-in-cheek,
sure,
but that is something that you face.
Yeah, it's a real thing. I think when you're coming from a minority perspective and you're trying to work in the mainstream, there are certain limitations that you may face as a person of color and as a queer person of color. Not only are you confronting racism, but sometimes homophobia as well. And as a queer man of color myself, I've definitely wanted to write a piece that could speak about the way that race and sexual orientation has affected my experience as an artist. And Buck is, I guess, a thin veil for sort of some of my own personal experiences as a writer as well.
Do you feel times are getting better, things are changing for the better? I know there's great strides still need to be made, but have things changed for the better?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. We started Pillow Talk 4 years ago at the peak of marriage equality, and at that time, it felt like we had made such huge progress towards queer liberation, and we just wanted to expand that conversation and the impact of that movement to talk about the issues that were of more concern to queer communities of color. And in the past few, since that day,
yes,
and we've seen these changes, I think we've just experienced more of a backlash against queer rights, gay rights, visibility of LGBTQT people in the mainstream, and also because we're talking about race and it's an interracial relationship, Black Lives Matter, and the backlash against Black Lives Matter has been also something that we've been exploring and interpreting in a different way now that the times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are very pensive about what's going on.
What do you both hope people take away from this experience when they go to ConFest this year, if they're going for the first time or maybe for the second or third time?
You know, I think it's a different way of talking about intersectionality. I mean, to build on what Kyung just said, you know, none of us live in silos, and we are all connected to each other, but you know, by virtue of leaving one's house in the morning, and so we share any number of cultural experiences and markers, and we learn from each other. So there's not cultural appropriation, but something that we might call appropriate sharing, and a type of cultural absorption. So I think that when we allow ourselves to see our own story in someone else's experience, to allow for a Korean American specificity from within that we can all somehow find ourselves, there's something very powerful and once again revolutionary about just that.
It absolutely is, and I think respect is so important. You made a great point. We all drink our coffee. We all go to sleep at night. You know, there needs to be more of a respect level for all cultures, all genres, all sexual orientation, etc.
Yeah.
Which Aretha Franklin told us.
That's right. R-E-S-P-E-C-T is the queen of soul, said herself. But that's, I just, like I said, it needs to be a respect factor there.
Yeah. I think one of the major things that we also wanted to do as artists, guests here in Chicago, was to share the story of these two people that that exist in our world in New York, but also be able to share this with the local queer community here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So speaking of intersectionality, we've partnered with 6 local community organizations, the SIP, which is the only live broadcast radio show produced by 3 gay men of color, mm-hmm. Nothing Without a Company, Urban Theater Company, which is Latinx Theater Company, Alta, which is also a Latinx Theater Association, and I am missing one, Eye to Eye, Invisible to Invincible, which is the Asian Pride of Chicago organization. And together we've created a conversation that will take place after a Friday performance to talk about how we can create intersectional community building and also how organizations led by men can step back and nurture women, trans, non-binary, and gender leadership here in Chicago as well. So we wanted to create a space where we could tell our stories, but also provide a space for people who come to see our show to tell their stories as well.
And Confest 2018 runs through August 18th, sponsored by CADA, the Consortium of Asian American Theaters and Artists. Best of luck. I hope it's the biggest and best one ever.
Thank you so much.
And
thank
how
you.
Do people find information? Is there a website we can go to get tickets?
www.cata.net.
Very good. Kyung, thank you.
Thank
best
you.
Best of luck with Pillow Talk.
Thanks so much.
And Jamil, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you at Confest. More after this on WGN. I'm going to listen to Aretha Franklin in the car all the way home. After Elizabeth Alfano, of course. And Nick. I'll just put on a CD when I get home. God, isn't she wonderful? Queen of Soul passes away today at the age of 76. Program continues. Patty Vasquez Show with me, Andrea Darlis. Patty's on vacation. And I have in studio with me now the CEO of Working in the Schools, or WITS, mm-hmm. Brenda Langstrad. Thanks for being here.
Andrea, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. What's your favorite Aretha song? I saw you kind of swaying to some of those.
I mean, respect. Moves. It has to be respect.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of them. But everything, you know, that she said about the song, that, you know, regardless of age, race, it's just such a meaningful song.
Oh, yeah. It truly is. And she inspired everybody. Paul McCartney was even tweeting today about how Aretha Franklin inspired him as
a young
musician.
Well, and, you know, so many songwriters worked with her and were inspired by her, were inspired to write songs about her. I mean, it's just, what a beautiful life to
absolutely.
Celebrate today.
Absolutely. Yep. Thoughts and prayers going out to everyone in Aretha Franklin's families. Well, we're here, as I said, to talk a little bit about WITS.
Yeah.
Tell us about this program. This is a wonderful program that I'm sure not a lot of people know of, and they should.
And they should. So WITS has been around as an organization for 26 years, delivering literacy programs in Chicago public schools. So just a few years ago, we actually merged with another organization called Boundless Readers. So what we do, our program model, is to recruit volunteers to work as literacy mentors with our students. So reading one-on-one with the same student throughout the school year, and also we have volunteers who are working in the summer. And then also we're teaching teachers in literacy best practices, providing professional development, libraries for their classrooms. So really it's this holistic approach to literacy advancement in our schools, creating really a culture of joyful learning environments in our schools, you know, books that are engaging students, things that they want to read about. And our programs are pre-K through eighth grade. So really designed to move students from those key benchmarks and learning to read, and then making the transition from learning to read to reading to learn. And that's where we see that, you know, spark of a love of learning, all of that curiosity. We all remember it growing up, right?
Oh, yeah. Remember you'd have contests to see who could read more books.
Right.
And then they'd give away stuffed animals at school.
And one of the first identities that you have in school is I can read. And once you feel that you can read, then everything else opens up. So, you know, we believe as an organization that, you know, it is about delivering reading programs, but to be literate and to build like literate communities in our schools is interdisciplinary. You know, without a high level of literacy, there is no comprehension of science and math and technology and engineering and the arts, really. So literacy is something that runs all the way through all of those disciplines.
How is Chicago doing as a whole when it comes to reading, literacy? Are we doing okay?
You know, that's a great question. We have great leadership in Chicago Public Schools right now. Janice Jackson, you know, I always say is a rising rock star in urban education. She is just fantastic. And she's put together a team that is really focused on literacy as equity, right? You know, access to literacy, engaging students in joyful learning experiences is the way to advance them. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited about working alongside of the CPS leadership. And I think this is really an extraordinary time for us to leverage partnerships throughout CPS to do everything we can to surround our students with what they need to advance.
Do you find it's easier to motivate kids now because they just take such an interest in learning how to read at a younger age?
At a younger age, you know, definitely. You know, pre-K through third grade is so critical because that third and fourth grade reading benchmark is where they do, where they should be making that transition from learning to read to reading to learn.
Okay.
And when we can do that, then, you know, all the research tells us that they're four times more likely to graduate from high school and, you know, really advance and identify as reader. Mm-hmm. You know, if our students are not identifying as a reader during that third and fourth grade, that's when they're forming integrated identity. So if they're not identifying as reader, we run the risk of them choosing another identity, right?
Okay, that
and
makes sense.
And so you
sense.
Talk to all of our educators and our principals, and, you know, it's such a critical time. So, you know, really our programs are designed to be sure that they're hitting that reading benchmark and then advancing and really, like, you know, finding what they want to read and learn about in those later elementary school years.
Is it also designed to not let kids fall through the cracks too?
That's exactly
grab
it.
Grab those kids.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and CPS is doing an extraordinary job. And there was just a report from Stanford that said that, you know, our students are outpacing the national average. And, you know, all of that is really good news. But it takes all of us as a community to come together and support our students. You know, these young people are the future of our city and, you know, worthy of our investment of time and resources. And, you know, our schools are doing everything they can. And as a community, we have the opportunity, especially through an organization like WITS, to roll up our sleeves and do more.
Right. And when most schools close, you know, or not, I shouldn't say close, but when it's summer
mm-hmm.
vacation, sure, in May or June.
Right.
But WITS stays open and you helped 7 CPS schools stay open for an extra 5 weeks for mm-hmm. their summer programs. And you just concluded that.
Right. Our summer program is an intensive program for our pre-K students. Kindergarten readiness is a real indicator of future academic success. So these are littles, you know, who are going in, our 5 and 6 year olds. And an intensive program that's led by a teacher, but also we have volunteers who are working one-on-one with the students mm-hmm. 4 days a week. And, you know, really we are sure that when these students finish the program, they are on track, ready for kindergarten. And also, you know, on a social emotional level, they're getting used to being in school, right?
Right.
All of our programs are privately funded, so they're free to the schools and to the families. So this is a free, intensive pre-K program that really makes all the difference for these students.
So when they show up for kindergarten, they should be able to read, not obviously they're not going to read books,
right.
like big books, but
right.
they can, what level should they be at?
So a level that they really understand phonics. So what okay. we do for phonics is what we call zoo phonics. So the students are learning the alphabet and also, you know, moving their bodies, like acting out like different animals according to like the letters.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's so important too, because that muscle memory, you know, helps with
oh,
the
sure.
brain memory for
yeah.
all of us.
It's, yeah.
Also book and print awareness. So, you know, really understanding even, you know, how a book works and, you know, turning the pages. It's that tactical activity of, like, you know, looking at books. Recognizing letters is, you know, one of the most important things. But also what our summer program does is just engage them. We do, we focus on one fairy tale every week.
Okay.
So really they're getting to know these fairy tales. We're asking them questions. We're sparking the imagination. And also they're working in small groups, even, you know, in drama centers to act out the story that was just read to them by the teacher.
Oh, how fun.
Oh,
so they learn that at a young age, too.
It's such a great program. And then for most of our students who are in the pre-K program, we're also doing a kindergarten program with them during the school year, also engaging volunteers who are working one-on-one with them.
I love that. And one of my favorite things, WITS builds in playtime, too. So it's not all school, work, read. There's
right.
playtime.
Agency is so important in our programs that, you know, in our teacher professional development programs, it's teacher-led, teacher-driven. So it's teachers, you know, building mentors. mentorship pipelines of teachers who are really training each other in what's working in the classroom. We do the same with our students in our literacy mentor program. So our mentors are trained to really guide our students toward what they want to read about. You know, when I first started working at WITS, I started volunteering in our third grade program. And I had a student that was pretty far behind in reading. But he didn't want to read, right?
Okay.
But he was super into sharks. And I'm like, we are going to find every book on sharks to engage the student.
And that's what you did.
Right. That works. And, you know, because we, you know, agency is such a priority for us, then, you know, our mentors really have the freedom to guide the student in that way. And the student has the freedom, you know, in a less structured way than the normal school day, to read whatever they want to read. And that's the important thing. If they want to read the, you know, same book over and over again, there's real value in that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's meeting them
wherever they are.
Right. Think about it. What was your favorite book as a kid? Like Goodnight Moon? Or, I mean, you pick a book that inspired you at a very young age.
Exactly. And the Dr. Seuss books are so good.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Because I still love those.
They're catchy. You know, there's so many great books that are being published now that, you know, make students laugh too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's so important. You know, there's something, and we have a volunteer corps of 1,500 mentors, a majority of which come from corporate partners. So these are corporate employees who are going into the schools and reading with the younger students, and then many of them, we bus the students in the after school hours and they're going out to the workplace or to a university and working with their mentors there. So it's this whole experience of like, oh, this person's coming into my school to be with me, right? Like,
yeah.
There's pride in that. Or I'm going downtown to like work with my mentor. But, you know, everything about literacy and reading is a community experience, right?
It is.
Like, you know, if I just read a book that I'm really excited about, which I did, Manhattan Beach, and you should read it.
Oh, cool.
Andrea.
I'm going to write this down.
Yep. Jennifer Egan. Fantastic book.
Always
all of your listeners should read it.
I am always looking for a
masterpiece. you know, so as soon as we put down that book or, you know, we're engaged in a book, it is like our natural human tendency to want to share out with others.
It was like the original Netflix. It was the original, you know, hey, did you read thus and so or, you know, The Client or pick a book, you know, that you read, you know, in college and then you all talk about it.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, literacy, you know, yes, is about reading and that's how we engage ourselves and, you know, learning how to read and to comprehend. But, you know, really literacy means absorbing information, comprehending information, and then being able to communicate yourself back out in the context of what you have just learned. And you think about the world that we live in right now and the platforms of information that we have access to, you know, even like social media, you know, so to be highly literate means that you can quickly absorb and comprehend information and then communicate back out. So, you know, we talk a lot at WITS and with other literacy organizations that to be literate is more important now than ever because we have so much access to information, but especially our young people have so much access to information. So to train them to be able to read and to be literate means they are going to be able to process the world around them, to become more empathetic, right?
Right.
Because once we understand someone else's narrative, we're able to empathize, we're able to engage at a higher level.
It's a beautiful cycle. I want to talk to you more about social media and volunteering too.
Great.
And how you can get involved. We're talking to Brenda Langstrath, the CEO of Working in the Schools or WITS, and we'll be back after this on WGN.
You better think about what you're trying to do to me. Yeah. Think. Let your mind go, let yourself be free. Let's go back, let's go way on back. I didn't even know you came to me and too much good.
Listen to this all night. All right, I won't do that, though. We have much more important things to talk about. Brenda Langstrath, the CEO of WITS, working in the schools. We're talking about literacy, how important it is to start your children reading at a very young age. Make sure they are ready to be reading by kindergarten. Right. And WITS provides that service for them, which is wonderful. And you're involved with Chicago Public Schools and helping kids read. And before the break, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned social media.
Mm-hmm.
Does social media hurt or help nowadays when it comes to reading in our children?
You know, it's a good question because it's the world we live in, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, as we were saying a little bit before the break and during the break, you know, to be literate means something different now than when maybe you and I were younger, right? Where we go to the library, we have access to books and we read books and, you know, there weren't computers in schools. And
right.
I'll speak for myself.
No, me too, because we had a library card.
Yeah.
It was so cool to be able to go to the library and check out books.
So everything about reading was tactical, right?
Yeah.
It was something that you pick up and you read and you take home and that sort of thing. You know, what we find, especially in working in partner, we also work in partnership with Chicago Public Library, is that, you know, students still, even with all of the access to technology and electronic books and all of that, even the older students, you know, the teenagers, want, when they really want to read a book, they're picking up books and they want to read in that way. And, you know, many of us read in different ways. If we're traveling, maybe it's an electronic book on, you know, the iPad or, you know, and then books, like tactical books at home. So I think it just depends. With social media, you know, kind of back to our point about, you know, absorbing and comprehending and understanding information, you know, to be literate is also to be able to, you know, look at Facebook and decipher what is good information, yes, and what is unimportant information, what is relevant information.
You know, it's key for adults, too.
It's key for adults. You know, I talk to our WITS team and, you know, to our board frequently about, you know, how, you know, when we're advocating for literacy, that we advocate for it being more important than ever, for our libraries to be more important than ever, because we need to be able to comprehend information and process more quickly, right, than when we were younger, and to be able to understand what is good information and relevant information.
WITS serves more than 10,000 students in 80 elementary schools through programs that provide professional development, as you said, Brenda, for teachers, mm-hmm, and engaging volunteers. And you have a lot, yeah, of volunteers, but you can always use more.
Right. And our teachers just finished their professional development for the year. And I think I mentioned, you know, in addition to really high-level professional development, they receive a classroom library, a stipend for classroom libraries. So students can check books out of their classroom. And these are cool books that students want, right? All of our WITS libraries are informed by the students that we serve. Whatever they want to read, we are putting in those libraries. So our volunteer corps, we have 1,500 volunteers. It's the largest volunteer corps of mentors that works with Chicago Public Schools. We can serve as many students. We have a wait list of schools as volunteers that we can recruit. We have 70 corporate and university partners. So often we're working with, you know, companies of all sizes, and they're going as groups to mentor students, but also community volunteers. Anyone can call into our office or go to witschicago.org and check out the volunteer opportunities, reach out to us, and we will find the right fit. Because we all have that age that we're like good at working with, right?
Absolutely.
Like I'm good with third graders. So like that's where I volunteer, you know, in our WITS programs. Like, you know, 8 year olds, I can connect with the 8 year olds.
Right.
And so we really work to find the right fit geographically, you know, by age and the amount of time that the volunteers want to work. So we have many different programs in our portfolio and we'll look for the right fit.
Do you accept book donations?
We actually have an Amazon wish list.
Okay, good.
So donors can go on and, you know, buy those books on Amazon. They come directly to us.
Perfect.
And WITS is also part of the Chicago Literacy Alliance. There are many organizations that are part of the alliance, like Open Books, that receive donations of used books.
Very cool. And where can people go to get more information about WITS?
WITSChicago.org is our website. And our website has information on, you know, email addresses of, you know, different staff members that you can reach out to, and, you know, really robust information about the program.
Thank you for all the work that you do.
Oh, thank you for having me. And the new studio is just,
isn't it great?
Stunning.
And you didn't get distracted at all by Navy Pier or the hotel next door?
Not even distracted, because I love talking to you.
Right.
Andrea, thank you for everything you do to showcase the great work that's happening in our community.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
it's Brenda
it.
Langstrat, the Chief Executive Officer working in the schools, or WITS. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
We'll talk soon. More after this on WGN. Texters seem to be enjoying our Aretha Franklin montage that we're playing tonight, in and out of every break. Here's to Aretha Franklin for all the memories and beautiful, soulful, velvety voice music that you've provided for us over the years. Sorry I'm talking over the words. Texter was upset I was talking over Aretha. Trey, you know what? I'd love to listen to Aretha all night, too. Trust me. But we have important guests to bring you and lots of great stories to tell. Right now, another story from a female entrepreneur. I should just say an entrepreneur. Rona Berry took a leap of faith and started a company in the second bedroom of her condo. You might have heard of it, a little company called Instant Alliance, and she joins us on the phone now. Hi, Rona.
Hi, Andrea. How are you tonight?
I'm great, thank you. It's very exciting for me to talking to the recipient of the Enterprising Woman of the Year by Enterprising Women magazine.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you this evening.
Tell us a little bit about how you started your company. Did you really start it in the bedroom of your condo?
Yes, I did. And I actually started with my first employee. His name was Henry Borey. He was my English bulldog. And it was me and him who got the company off and running.
He didn't talk back to you. That's a good thing.
Actually, he did. That was the thing that kept me going the most. No, I'm just kidding with you.
The company first was Instant Technology. It's now Instant Alliance. And tell us about the company.
Sure. Actually, in the most simplest forms, we find jobs for people in the technology and the financial sector. So I'm really heavily involved in the Chicago community. I love living in this town. We have such amazing vibe and companies sprouting up everywhere and new innovation going on. It's just a pleasure to work in a city where you can really bring great talent to amazing companies and companies who really enjoy working with people and find the value in having great talent work for their organizations.
I know, I'm probably biased in this sense too. I think Chicago is the greatest city in the world. So, but I'm sure you want Amazon and Google and all those big companies to just make their home bases right here.
You know, I think there's a place for them, but I also think that, you know, I come from an entrepreneurial spirit, mm-hmm. and I love people who have new innovative ideas that are just kind of going for it and taking their concept and bringing it to market and trying to really work with the community out there to make it better, whatever products and services those are. So I think there's room for the big Fortune 100 and companies like Amazon, but I also feel like there's a lot of support and the community really rallies around entrepreneurship in this city. And I'm a big backer of that as well. And I think it's just telling your story and getting out there. And I think there's talent for both types of organizations.
I heard that you have a passion for your clients, and when you first started, you were hand-delivering checks. You knew people's kids and actually took an interest in their lives, which is kind of unheard of, Rona.
Well, you know, when you're in a professional services business, you know, it's really hard to differentiate yourself. And I think knowing your clientele, and for us, our clientele is not only the companies we place the candidates in, but it's the people that we place in those clients. And I think taking a vested interest in those people and really going above and beyond is what got me going. And I really am appreciative for, you know, all the people at the beginning who really knew I went the extra mile and kind of stuck with me and really promoted me when I started my organization. So, and that's really why Chicago is great. You know, you do a good job for people, and they really have your back in this town.
Rona, what I think is very cool, too, on a personal level, is that with the Me Too movement and Stand With Her, your team recently placed 100 people with McDonald's, two-thirds of those positions going to women, including Amy Martin, the global CMO.
Yeah, she's actually doing a tremendous job at McDonald's, and we really try to put women in technology positions. I think the market has changed a lot, and I think women are really, you know, at the forefront of technology, and there's a lot of positions in not only digital but project management and business analysis, and these women who are really able to take the functional piece of the business and connect it with technology and be able to lay that out for business executives. It's really being able to get in front of these people and communicate the right message. And women are able to do that in a really great way. And it's nice to see a lot of leadership and women in these leadership roles. And it's our pleasure to be able to work with amazing women every single day who are really driving innovation in this town.
Rona, I have a 22-year-old cousin who knows code. And she was talking about Bitcoin three or four Christmases ago, and we're going, what is Bitcoin? You know, so at the time, she's a teenager. So I guess, how has the market changed for these young women coming into the field?
I think women today have so much more exposure to the world in general. And because of the internet, they can look at cool ideas or innovation and kind of see where companies are going, what they're working with, what are the newest technologies, and get involved in user groups or internships or just research the technology and become familiar with it. And so it's a whole different game as it was 5 years ago, because these students are able to go and create projects and do things on the fly. And it's so different because the network now is, you know, it's open source, so you don't need to have to pay to learn something. You can go learn it and go on an open source platform and actually play around with it, go use different applications, create applications, and it's a whole different place than it was 5 years ago. So I think more and more people are being exposed to more and more technologies. The technology is changing quicker and faster, and it's giving students an opportunity to kind of go explore out there and play with things that they might not have been exposed to before because it was expensive to do these things. Now you can, you know, be able to go and join these clubs or internships or get online and go play with the technology. It was never like that before.
It's unbelievable. In your experience, what are companies looking for now? Are they looking for schooling, more schooling, or more life experiences, more work experience?
You know, I think it's different for different companies, but to me, it's really about the experience you bring to the table and how you're going to be able to change the value proposition for that company. People want people who are genuinely interested in their brand, their product. How are they going to change that customer experience, right? And how are they going to enhance that customer experience and make, and whatever their product is, maybe have an ROI or what is, how can they change that journey? And people who are genuinely interested in what a company is doing and their mission, and they come in and they're able to convey that, really those companies are wanting to bring those folks on, because a lot of the times they can learn the different skills within a company, but you can't ever teach passion or drive.
That was my next question to you, too. With your passion for human capital leading to Instant Alliance's 97% client return rate. That's insane. 97%. And I mean it in the best possible way. How do you teach building client relationships? Does they have to come within you?
I think it does. You know, everyone who works for me, I've kept the same executive team. We really have a high-touch, white kit glove approach in how we deal with our clients. On every engagement we walk into, someone from our executive team who's got a lot of experience is involved with those searches, involved with that client. And our pleasure is when we can really bring the right talent, and then that company can move forward because of the talent we bring. And it's not something you can teach. It's just something that exists within our culture, and that's what makes us so great.
Rona, when it comes to tech and finance talent, what advice would you have for people looking to change jobs?
I think, you know what, the most important thing is see what you're interested in and be okay to fail. You know, I think look up, research, look what companies are doing, and get connected with firms like ourselves or heads of HR and companies and start to build a relationship with those people and begin talking about what is the next initiative for those companies. How can you bring value? If you're not sure how you can bring value, maybe you should, you know, go out, get involved in a user group, start doing things where you can talk about experiences that you have that you can then bring to the table to help move that company forward.
It's hard to push yourself, though. It's hard to brag about yourself. What would you tell clients, though? Hey, put all that put that aside and put your best foot forward and talk about how great you are.
Yeah, I think there's always a balance, right? You want to be able to convey the proper message to a client without sounding arrogant. And I think, you know, the best people can be able to weave in accomplishments they have, but also come in with a level head and really look at the person you're interviewing with, pick up their vibe, be well-educated on that company, what initiatives, and be educated on the person that you're interviewing for. There's very few times I actually have had someone come to me in an interview and they come prepared, know what our organization's about, get that interview well, and, you know, maybe you don't get the job every time, but I think more times than not, those people who come prepared are the people who win at the end of the day.
And if you don't get the job the first time, it's a good experience that you've gone through the process. You know, you have your ducks in order and you learn from that and you'll be better the next time around.
Absolutely. Listen, everyone goes through failures in their life. I've learned the most from the failures I've had throughout business. I have not gone unscathed, let me tell you. But you know what? You got to be able to pick yourself up. You got to be able to say, okay, this is what I think I did well. This is what I think I could have done better at. And just keep going down, you know, slough it off and continue down with a positive attitude. And, you know, in the end, so something will come and it will all work out. It always does.
Did you always have such a positive attitude? Did you always know that you'd be this successful?
You know what? I just wake up every single day, and I'm really lucky that I get to work in a town that I love living in. I get to represent people who genuinely are so happy when we find them the right opportunity, and that clients who really appreciate our work. So, you know what? I'm a happy girl, and people like to be around people that are happy, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I know you're a Chicago girl as well. What's your favorite place to visit in the city when you have free time? And that's free time, Rona.
Okay, so I do love shopping, and I have to say, you know, there's nothing better than just being able to, like, walk down Michigan Avenue or walk down North Avenue Beach on a summer day and just take in the city and go out to lunch and sit outside. And any chance I get, I'm always walking around. Actually, we just moved to offices right on the riverfront, and now I get a take a half hour, walk out of my office, and I'm right on the river, and I absolutely just love, you know, just feeling the energy of the city.
Right, just breathing it all in. Rona, where can people find out more about you or Instant Alliance?
Sure. They are welcome to reach out to me direct. My name is Rona Bori. I'm also known as the Chicago Tech Connector. They can go to our website, which is www.instantalliance.com or www.instanttechnology.com or instantfinance.com, or they can call us direct at 312-582-2600.
Fantastic. Rona Bori, thank you so much for your time, and go out there and enjoy Chicago.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a great night.
You too now. That's Rona Bori. She is the Instant Alliance founder and CEO. Wow, a lot of great information there, too. So take it all in. Facebook and Twitter as well. We'll have more after this on 720 WGN. I love you. I could listen to this all night. I've been saying this. People are texting saying, stop talking. Play Aretha. I would love to. Steve Byrne is from the Better Business Bureau, president and CEO. Thanks for being with us. I have not seen you in a long time.
It's been a long time. Nice studios, by the way.
Yeah, it's a reunion. This is your first time here.
First time here. It's kind of hard not to look out.
Beautiful view, as I tell everyone.
Navy Pier.
Enjoy Navy Pier. Don't look in the windows of the hotel next door.
That's right, yes.
And a word of advice to anybody staying anywhere in any hotel in any major city, no matter how high the building, always close your drapes.
Close your drapes. Always close your drapes. I've seen so many things out of my office.
Okay, so every time, we have a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on. I have to ask you, though, about the IRS scam, because we've all, a couple of years ago, I got the call, and they said, this is the IRS. If you don't wire however much money, you will be arrested. Don't ignore this. And I immediately called you.
Correct.
And as soon as your phone rang, you picked up, you said, you got the IRS scam.
Right, exactly.
You said, Tracy Butler got it.
Everybody was getting it. It seemed like they hit the reporters for some reason that period of time.
It was like media day.
And then it went to parents, because I think your mom called
my
me
mom,
that one call.
Oh, yeah. My mom got it a bunch, too. And she still got it up until about a couple of months ago.
Right.
And she'd call and say, I got that IRS scam again. Yeah. She's you're her new best friend.
That's right.
But
she calls me.
I know. she calls you a lot.
She does. I appreciate it. I'd rather them call me than not call me, to be honest with you.
And I'll tell everyone why she does call you, because you really helped her out with a scam. She almost got scammed.
She almost got scammed,
and you helped her out big time, which we'll talk about, too. But the IRS scam, I read something where finally at the federal level, they think they have isolated and figured out where this is originating, and they're going to try and pursue it and shut it down once and for all.
What happens? They do shut it down. They recently shut it down in India, but again, it just resurges again. It's a perennial issue. It won't go away because it works. They scare the heck out of people to believe that they're actually going to jail. Some say they're going to be deported. They sound very threatening. They say they're going to embarrass you. They have pictures that they're going to find you. The police are on their way. The sheriff's on the way, and they scare these people, and these people are fearful, and they run to the nearest store, and they buy those gift cards or those they wire money outside the country, whatever it is. And if anybody has to ask you to do something in 30 minutes or less, that is the tip off to the ripoff. I can't stress that enough. If anybody ever calls you, sends you an email saying you got to do something in 30 minutes or less, it's a scam. The only thing you should do in 30 minutes is buy a pizza.
Is get a pizza, right? And
that's
it makes sense too. But you know, you do get scared. I mean, I immediately called you. This is a few years ago. Then I got it again, and then friends of mine were all getting it. So you know, they're targeting people. We all, I think this is a reservation as well too. Sometimes, Steve, people shouldn't feel silly about calling you.
Not at all.
Because you can not only save yourself, but 100 other people,
prevent
too.
It happening. My biggest frustration, my 31-year career at the Better Business Bureau, has been when people call us after when it's too late. We had a woman not that long ago in Omaha who lost, I think it was up almost $100,000 in a fake scam. She called us after she sent the money, not before. We would have told her in 3 seconds it's a scam. We're not the panacea of the Better Business Bureau, but consumers in our fast-paced society don't take the time necessary to research companies or organizations. The internet has a wealth of information on there. Consumers just don't have the time, and they believe because it's on the internet, it's true, and it's frustrating. That's probably the biggest frustration in my career, because we have all this information on companies, who to stay away from, what scams. If everybody called me, they wouldn't be scammed.
Right.
Because we know what's happening out there. We have the track record of companies. We have a scam tracker similar to a Santa tracker, mm-hmm. where we look at for the scams are where they're happening in the U.S. and where they're moving and in your local neighborhood. So if you ever see a scam and you say, I'll never fall for this, but let us know because we can forewarn others. So by go to our scam tracker, the Better Business Bureau site, and get information about the scam in your area.
Absolutely. It's BBB.org. We're talking to Steve Burness, the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau. If you have a question or you want to text in, 312-981-7200 is our number. What you helped my mom with is that she got locked out of her house, and she had her phone, she went online and called a locksmith, and immediately he started asking, well, I need your social security number, right. and I need, he was asking all, but not where do you live and I'll be right there, right. but all kinds of personal information, and I said, call Steve Burness.
Right.
And she did, and you said, who is it? Mm-hmm. And within 5 minutes, you said, tell what you said.
Basically,
Steve.
Within a couple of minutes, we told it was an F-rated organization that was known as this a telemarketing firm that was actually just saying they were locksmiths, and they actually weren't. So they were taking information from consumers, and they weren't actually delivering anything. So we actually had an F record with them. But so many times with these locksmiths, they just operate out of their cards. They're not businesses at all. So many times people go to the internet, and they take the first two listings. Those are ads. I can buy an ad in Google in 30 seconds and say I'm a plumber, I'm a whatever it may be. So people tend to think those first two positions on Google, not really on the top. They do say ad. It's really small.
You're right. You have to really be careful. Yes. I got fooled on that one time with Expedia. I was trying to go on and book a trip or book a hotel room, I think it was, and it was an ad for a different hotel.
Exactly.
And then I started getting random emails from Hotel B as opposed to the first one I was
and
trying to
And people don't
book.
Check. Unfortunately, they just look at the first listing. They think, oh, I'm going to get somebody. It's a locksmith. I need a plumber. I got water coming in my house. My roof is falling. Whatever the point may be. People just don't do the research. They've got to go to the Better Business Bureau site to look to see what the report is. But more importantly, they go to other sites too, like Google, and put the company's name and put the word scam next to it and see what actually comes up. But the Better Business Bureau is also referral agency. So if you do need a locksmith or an automobile or waterproofer, you can go to our website.
You'll tell a good one.
We'll tell you who they're credited by us or not.
Exactly, exactly. You guys did a recent study that reveals widespread victims as a sweepstakes scam bilked over $100 million from more than a half million victims last year. Those numbers are crazy
high. It's staggering,
high.
These numbers. We actually issued a study on a national level, and it's actually an international problem is happening. $100 million, that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's the people we know about. If 9 out of 10 people don't complain, which most people don't, think about it. It's probably $1 billion is lost to this scam. We had the Oakland Police Department told me a few weeks ago that a woman lost $100,000. She thought she won the lottery, and they kept bilking her out of $100,000. Then she went to the police, and unfortunately, it was too late. So sometimes it's small amounts from $500, and sometimes it's six figures to $100,000, and people feel that they won this sweepstake and that they're going to be millionaires, so why not give $100,000? I'm getting $32 million. He told me it was guaranteed. Anybody tells you have to pay anything for that you won something, that is the tip-off to the rip-off.
I get this so often, and unfortunately, sometimes when I pop up our website, it'll say Amazon sweepstakes or spin the wheel, and you've won something. I never click on that.
And
I just
consumers
shut it
should
down.
Never click on those. Exactly.
What happens if you click
on
those?
Basically, those are advertisements, so you never know where actually they're going. They can go to a third-party website, which can put spam or malware on your computer. They can lead you anywhere. You just don't know. The Better Business Bureau always suggests you never follow a link or an email or an advertisement. Go to the website directly by keying in the information yourself that you know about, because those are ads, and they can take it to another third-party site that looks like a reputable site, you can't tell. You can't tell what a criminal looks like. You can't tell a fake website. I can't tell, and I've been doing it for 31 years.
Yeah.
Criminals look like us. They dress like us. They talk like us.
Right.
Websites look like legitimate websites. And, you know, a lot of the fake websites, we had one this morning as a heating and air conditioning company who just stole another heating and air conditioning's logos, and they stole the Better Business Bureau logo and everything like that.
No kidding.
So consumers looking at it think it's a reputable site. It's got the BBB seal on it, and it's a well-known organization that advertises all over the airwaves, and it's not. They just took their name, put it as a heating and air conditioning company, and they're fraudulent.
Okay, how do you find these companies? Is it because someone calls them?
Somebody called
on
us. Fortunately, they called us on as well. But consumers have to do their own homework. There was misspellings on this website.
Right.
I mean, they couldn't spell trainer right, and they couldn't spell employee right. There's just several indications what it happens. But a new trick that Better Business Bureau found out is very helpful is to go to the photo, right click on it using Google Chrome, and do a Google search of that picture.
Okay.
So I did the Google search of that picture and showed three other websites with that same exact picture.
No.
And it was different heating and air conditioning companies. That just tells you they just opened a website with fake heating and air conditioning type companies. And a lot of that time with the puppy scams, we issued a big study on that.
Yes, you had a big, was that earlier this year?
And it was earlier this year as well.
So, oh, a huge press conference. Tell everybody about that. And you had actual victims who
fell for
this. We had
actual victims who lost $18,000.
And how could you not? I mean, because it seems legit.
It seems legit. They call you up, you got an email, they said they got these puppies available, they show you pictures of it, it's beautiful. It's half price puppies instead of, you know, $18,000, and they're only $9,000 today. You have to wire money outside the country or wire money to somebody, and then they say they're going to fly them into O'Hare. And all of a sudden they call you and say, you know what, we can't get into O'Hare, we need more money for landing fees, or you need more food for the dog. And they keep taking more money from this one consumer, lost $18,000.
Right, he was at the press conference. He was buying the dog for his daughter.
For his daughter. His daughter wanted a dog, and she fell in love with him on the internet. And he says, why? I mean, he told him everything he wanted to hear. Well, got a guarantee. I'll send you a guarantee. But the tip-off to the rip-off is wiring money. I mean, that is the biggest part of the scam. So if consumers remember one thing today is to check the organizations with the Better Business Bureau. Secondly is don't do anything within 30 minutes, pay or something, and don't wire money outside the country.
Well, these people ever get their money back?
No, unfortunately not. Wiring money outside the country is like if I open this window here and throw it all out the window, the same thing. You'll never get it back.
Yeah.
And consumers think they have the safety net. There is no safety net. You know. So if it's a fraudulent organization, they don't care. They're going to take the money, tell you anything you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell the difference from a fake website to a real website. You cannot.
Right.
You've got to do your own homework and your due diligence and do research on them and make certain that they meet your standards as well. Because just because the internet doesn't make them a good company.
I want to ask you too about fake tickets and wristbands. Now I know Lala, you know, the police confiscated a whole backpack full of these fake wristbands, and you don't know they're fake until you try and walk in the door and there you go.
A lot of kids didn't even realize what the bands looked like. So they were getting bands. They thought it was Lala bands. They said Lala on it, and they didn't actually were fake and fraudulent. It happens all the time with venues. It happens at the Bears games, the White Sox games, the Cubs games. There's always, every game, there's always ticket people that, you know, sell fraudulent tickets. And the only way you can tell a difference is if you, like you said, go in there and then you realize that you've been duped. It happens at the theaters. It happens everywhere. In some of the theaters, the ushers actually have the pre-printed instructions in their pocket saying, you've been scammed, sorry.
Wow.
So that's how much it happens. They have a pre-printed form on what to do, and there's basically nothing you can do. And
no, we had one of our former producers bought Hamilton tickets online.
Hamilton was a big problem.
Went in person, met the guy. She said, but I met the guy. And he handed me, wasn't a paper ticket, like an e-ticket. Mm-hmm. It was an actual ticket. And same thing, as soon as she walked up, she was taking her daughters, and she said to the theater, but I'm taking my daughters. And they said, we're so sorry.
Right.
There's nothing
that
we can do.
All the time as well. Until you get there, until you see it, you can't tell it's a fraudulent ticket. And you're buying on Craigslist, that's probably the worst thing to do. It's like buying somebody down the street, you know, in an alley that's selling tickets. You're not going to do it in an alley. Why would you do it on the Craigslist? You don't know who these people are, or they could tell you anything. They tell you, I'm going to the army, I'm getting, I have to go out.
Right.
Or something happened, I'm sick, and I can't go, and I need to meet you and sell you these tickets. And so to give you kind of an excuse to, he's going to the army, he's getting called up for duty. And there's all these horror stories. Even last year, one of the Hamiltons, there was another individual, 16 years old, and the counter artist said to the girl, happy 16th birthday, knowing that he was giving her fraudulent tickets.
Oh, my God.
And his mother paid $700 for two tickets or whatever it was.
That's absolutely brutal.
It's insane. These con artists, these scam artists, I don't care. They're relentless. I can't tell you how much they're increasing over time because of the internet, because it allows these con operators to operate worldwide now.
Right.
You can be in a coffee shop in Tibet and scamming somebody in America. It doesn't matter. They can be anywhere on the internet. Caller ID, you shouldn't believe caller ID, because a simple $20 program can change the caller ID. I can call your phone and change it to Naperville Police Department. You think it's Naperville Police Department calling. So you just because the phone rings, caller ID says who it is, doesn't mean anything. Scam artists are really one step ahead of us.
I want to talk to you about caller ID and potential spam, the pop-ups, sure, on your phone now from these spam phone calls, but one more question about the tickets too. Baseball tickets, that goes for the same,
yes,
be careful
venues.
Of all venues. Venues. It's not like, oh, it's Wrigley, so they can't do that. Yes,
they can.
What do you think? So Craigslist you mentioned. How about these other online marketplaces,
Facebook marketplace? You got to be careful who you're buying from. The only that we suggest is the online ticket brokers who are licensed.
And like make sure StubHub.
Those types of individuals that are licensed to operate. You have recourse with them. And obviously use your credit card, obviously. So a lot of people meet these people on the street and they give them money. It's gone as well. So make sure you just research those organizations and don't buy somebody on the street, because you don't know anything about them. They're going to tell you everything they want. The tickets look good. I can't tell sometimes the difference between a fake ticket or not.
No, I can't either.
You're not going to, I'm
well,
sure.
You're the CEO and president of the Better Business Bureau.
Right, exactly.
But
yeah, so
absolutely.
It's very difficult to tell.
We're talking to Steve Burness. We're getting a lot of texts, and we'll try and answer as many of these as we can after this on 720 WGN. It ain't no way for me to give you all you need. What's your favorite Aretha Franklin song? Do you have one? No? All of them? All of them tonight. We are talking to Steve Burness, the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau. A couple of texts coming in. First of all, my mom says hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm glad this person texted this. Unfortunately, most of, and this was, we did a story on this last year with you, Steve. Unfortunately, most of the people targeted are elderly.
Yes.
And may not be online. Is that true or false?
That is true. On these particular scams, on the sweepstakes scams, it's true. Sometimes it's the other scams are more millennials. So depending on the scam itself, but the elderly are usually susceptible to that. And sometimes they're home too, so they got the door-to-door people that come to your house, or the fake ComEd people.
Right.
Or the fake People's Gas or NICOR. So if somebody knocks at your door and says they're NICOR, it doesn't mean it's them.
Okay, let's take a few calls here. 312-981-7200 is our number if you want to hop on the line and talk to Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. Scott, you have a question for Steve?
Sure. Steve, I was wondering, I've gotten three calls the last 3 days where it's from an 800 number and it's for a $500 Costco gift card. We're offering this to you. You won or whatever. So I just delete the call. Does the Better Business Bureau want me to report that?
Yes,
or how do I go about reporting it?
Well, we'd like you to go to Scam Tracker on our website at bbb.org and report it where it's happening in your area. So we'll let the people in your area know and forewarn them. But please ignore those types of calls. Anybody says you won something, especially...
I do.
Yeah, just ignore it. But we do need the phone numbers, and we do need the information on Scam Tracker. So you go to bbb.org/Chicago and then look for Scam Tracker and report it for us.
Okay, thank you.
Hold on, Scott.
Yes?
Hold on. I'm going to give you a Lou Malnati's pizza for all your trouble. And it's a legit gift card. So we're not scamming you.
We just need your credit card number. That's all, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. And your Social Security number. Hold on, Scott. We're going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift card. Let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hi. My question is, I've been getting these phone calls almost every day. It's from my area code, and the first three numbers of my phone number always, it makes it look like it's somebody in my area, because it's the same number, the first six numbers are mine, and then all of a sudden the last four numbers are, then nobody leaves a message, I don't pick up the phone, and I've got about 50 or 60 of these things that I've recorded. But what's the scheme? I don't understand it.
I'm with you, and Gary, I'm gonna give you a pizza too, because I have that same thing. I just showed Steve all the spam calls that I've gotten today. I got two today. Same thing: your area code and the first three numbers of your phone. How do they get those?
Well, basically, they know what numbers they're calling, so they have the caller ID software that actually changes the caller ID, so they can ring it anything they want it to say. So they try to make you think, like Gary said, is they want to make you think it's a local call that you'll answer. They want to talk to you, so I can't tell you exactly what they want, but most of the time they want to steal your identity, they want to sell you sweepstakes or something like that. And they're fraudulent companies, so even though you register your number on the FTC site, you know, do not call list, doesn't matter, they're scammers, they don't care. So they want to get people to answer their phones so they can scam them. We were having that lunch that one day, and you remember?
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic. Oh, yeah. Gary, Steve and I were having lunch, and I got a spam phone call, and I handed the phone right to him. And he said, "This is Steve Burness, the president of the Better Business Bureau." And then they hung up.
They hung up on us, right.
How about if I do answer the phone and just give them a whole bunch of crap? Would that, do they just want me to answer? Can they get anything just from me answering? Because I can call them up, and every time they call, man, I'm gonna make them go blah, 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 blah.
There you go.
Gary, we suggest you not do that, because they can make have your number, and they can make your life miserable, give you more calls. So please just ignore them, block them with your cell phone.
Block them
as much as you can, and unfortunately, we don't want you to answer them.
There you go, Gary. We'll block him. Hang on the line. We're going to give you a pizza from Lou Malnati's as well. So that's what you have to do. Just block him.
Hang
out for a little bit more, a few more minutes with us, Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau, president and CEO. We have a bunch of texts coming in as well. We'll try to get to all of these as quickly as possible. First this on WGN. Remembering Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, passed away today at the age of 76. We've been enjoying some of her music throughout the show. Thank you for being with us. We're talking to Steve Burness, the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau. We have another text as well, Steve, about what you just addressed, the calls that show your own phone number on the caller ID. I get quite a few of those. Two other texts on that. So again, if you get those calls, just block them.
Block them and don't answer them, especially if they look familiar. And don't believe the caller ID, because they can change it with a $20 program.
Oh, God. All right. Here's from the 847. I had a company send me a check to buy gift cards, wanted to have me take money out while I was waiting for the check to clear. I'm a broke single mom, never worked out. He kept texting, was very upset. Single mom did the right thing.
She did the right thing, not doing anything. Exactly. Those check frauds is a big problem. People think they have 3 days, and if it clears, it's good as gold. It's not. It really, under federal law, the bank has up to 30 days.
Wow.
So most people in their heads think it's 3 days. The clears, that money's mine. So anybody sends you a check to do something, deposit it, or wire your money outside, that's a tip-off to the rip-off. We're working on another study, and it's on check fraud, and we're going to release it in early September. It's a massive international problem. Be careful if you're selling something on Craigslist, somebody sends you a check for overpayment. Oh, just wire me the extra money.
Don't do it.
Don't do it, because you cash a check, you wait 3 days, it's cleared. Hey, it's cleared. The bank can come back 29 days later and say it's a fraud check.
Don't do it. Steve, is it important for a home improvement contractor to carry insurance? And if so, how do I know that they actually have the insurance?
That's a great question. You got to ask the company for the insurance name, and then call the insurance company and make certain that they have insurance. So if it's State Farm or if it's somebody else, call that insurance company and make sure that they are licensed and make sure they're bonded and they have insurance. It's so important.
Okay. Another cell phone question. I believe the reason they need you to speak, to pick up the phone and speak, is because they use that as permission to sell your phone number to other marketing firms. I picked up one yesterday and took a chance and said hello, and they said, after speaking with you, you are now registered for our services. And they hung up.
Yeah. So you never know what they're going to do with it. So many times they call me. Sometimes they ask you, can you hear me now? And then you're supposed to say yes, and something's going to happen. So we don't know what they're doing with all this information. They're building profiles on people. Identity theft is a big problem.
Yeah.
It's best not to answer those calls and not even fall for those types of schemes.
And these can lead to identity theft. I know we're going to talk about that as well. And back to school scams.
Yes, it's unfortunate.
It's huge right now.
Especially with kids and fake fraudulent ID, fake IDs and stuff like that. So it's very important that...
I don't know what that is, Steve. We never did that.
No.
But
identity theft is a big problem. It's hitting students especially, but 70 million kids are going back to school soon, and that's ripe for the scam artists. They go after students because they're lax with their financial records, and they have clean credit reports, which means they easily can get a credit card. They always give it to college students easily.
Sure.
So they try to steal your identity and then open a credit card in your name, or sometimes your fellow students steal your stuff in your dorms too. So you got to be very careful careful with that. Students think, well, I didn't open anything, so I'm not going to have a credit report. But unfortunately, they open it and they change the address on it, so you never see the bill. The only time you sometimes know you're a victim of identity theft when you buy something you can't because you got a bad credit, and then you realize I've been a victim of identity theft. So,
and these college students too, I think, are very susceptible because for most, it's the first credit card
right.
they've had.
Exactly.
So they don't know, and they don't know not to give out their social security number
exactly.
and carry their social security cards around.
Yeah, they carry with them things like that. Just don't fall for those offers, especially college students. Research. They don't tend to research the millennials. They do fall victim to these types of scams, especially on the internet, because that's all they do is they have the phone open all the time and they're out texting and they get these pop-up ads, and that's ripe for the scammers who are going after those individuals.
So if a business or a school asks for social security number, they should ask questions.
Exactly. You want to make certain why they need your social security number. Never give your social security number to anybody that calls you out of the blue. That's the tip off to the rip off, because the bank has your information already. The IRS has your information. They're not going to call you and ask you for that information. But you do need to give your social security number to certain things. If you're taking a loan out, or if you're going to a doctor's office, they're going to ask you for that information. That's okay, but you know who they are and the reason they need it. But you just don't, somebody out of the blue, or you got to figure out who they are and why they want your information and guard it. I'd rather you not give it until you really figure out why.
And you have to be so careful of charities. I know I was getting a lot of emails with the wildfires in Athens, people saying, donate right. to, help Greece and help that, or the wildfires in California. And there's also misleading military charities, which is sickening.
It is sad. It is sad. The FTC, the Attorney General, and us, we released a list on over 100 charities that were fraudulent. 100 charities were fraudulent. They said they were helping, misleading claims that they were aiding military personnel for the and their families, and guess what? The only ones who were benefiting from it was the scam artists who were lining their pockets. So a lot of these charities were sounding like charities, trying to use the good name of others, legitimate charities, and they had a lot of veterans' names in there. So consumers thought they were donating to a legitimate charity, and they were fake, fraudulent charities, and the money was going into the pockets of the scam artists. But the key to all those charities is that we asked them for information on their background, their charities, and they didn't provide it. So charities don't have to provide the information, but if you don't provide it, we can't evaluate them.
Right, and why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want the Better Business Bureau to know about your charity?
Exactly. So they were done. They didn't disclose to us, and those were the charities that actually were sued and put out of business. And there were some big money involved in this, and
big time. And they sound so like Help the Vets,
right? Something, yeah.
Healing Heroes Network. That sounds extremely legit.
Right. You can't tell. How do you know the difference? And they could be really close to another charity with one word off. So a lot of consumers just don't check. And we say donate. Give, but give wisely,
mm-hmm.
and do the research on any charity ahead of time, especially around the holidays. But right now, we're seeing a big surge in fake charities. And again, there's a lot of great charities out there. I'm not trying to
No, not at all. No, you just have to be aware of what you're giving to.
Do some research on them. Check with the Attorney General's office. Make sure that they're registered with the Attorney General, and make sure you go through the Better Business Bureau site and make certain that they meet our standards for charitable accountability.
312-981-7200 is our number. We can take a couple more calls for Steve Burness with the Better Business Bureau. Also, want to let everybody know that if they get a hold of your office, they will get a little prize.
Yeah, if they call the BBB or email me, my email's on the website at bbb.org/Chicago, we'll give them out a BBB webcam cover. So a lot of people have post-it notes on their cameras, on their computers. So
yeah.
This is actually the cover that goes over it and it slides over. So you keep it closed so your camera's not active. And when you want to use your camera, you just slide it to open. That actually helps you in case you get hacked in your computer. If you don't have anything cover your camera, they can see you, or they can mm-hmm. see inside your house. So,
is that your iPad, too?
Yeah, iPads as well. So
okay.
It works
These
on both.
These are great. So yes. Call Steve or shoot
item.
Him an email.
Shoot me an email at bbb.org/Chicago and look for Steve Burness, and I'll send you one free of charge if you're a listener to the show.
That's fantastic, because otherwise you'd have to buy these at the Apple Store.
Exactly.
It's a lot cheaper to get them through you for free. Okay, let's talk. All right, don't get excited. Judy is on the line.
Judy.
Hi.
Hi, Judy.
Yes, I don't know if it's a scam or not. It may be really people's trying to sell me things, but they are using numbers that are all local with names. One I even got from Lutheran General.
Oh, see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're using that caller ID, and they change it around and make it look familiar. We had a lot of reports that people are calling from police stations and legitimate charities. It doesn't matter what that caller ID says, because they can quickly change it with a $20 program. So don't believe the caller ID, and do your own research before answering the phone. And
right.
and make sure that you know who they are.
Yeah, and Judy, I got a couple of those today. I just showed Steve. One said like Ruth Rabbit. Right. I mean, they're funky names, but they are names. Yes. So I just block those two. Right. You know, if you don't know you who
answer.
It is,
they want you to answer.
Yeah,
don't if you don't know who it is, this, they'll call you back and go to voicemail.
Absolutely, exactly. Yeah. Right. If it's important, they'll go to voicemail. Right. And let's take one more from Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi. How are you this evening?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I got a question. Why don't these multi-billion-dollar-making phone companies be able to block a phone number coming into somebody's phone via the caller ID that are no longer in service? When you call that number back, it'll say the phone number is disconnected or anything, and it should only take a fraction of a second for them to identify it before it actually hits your caller ID. I spent 15 years in telecom, and they could never answer that for me when I was there.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's I don't have an answer to that question as well, but then I know the numbers change so rapidly
that
it's so hard for the phone companies to keep track of these. And so many times these fake companies use the fake caller ID and they send out fraudulent numbers that don't exist. So you think you're getting a call from a company with that phone number that doesn't exist. They're using it as a hidden shield in that call to you so you don't know that it's any but them.
Boy, so just, again, block the calls, don't answer them.
Let it go to voicemail, that's important.
Let it go to voicemail. Actually, I got a weird number from the 512 area code. It actually turned out to be a legit call, and it went to voicemail. So
right, at least you know. And if you stay away from the 202, because that's Washington, D.C., that's the IRS. So
right.
The IRS is not going to call you and take you to jail in 30 minutes or less
exactly.
if you don't pay. They don't do that.
And they're not going to leave you a message saying, hey, wire us money.
Right, exactly. And it's a tip off the rip of wiring money. If anybody listens to this, please don't wire money outside the country to anybody. And check with the Better Business Bureau first. It's the biggest frustration is not checking ahead of time.
And one more question. This is just my personal question for you, sure. Steve. It's so strange when you're looking for something online. Say I'm looking for a dress or a pair of gym shoes or something like that. I'll go to my Facebook or my Twitter, and there it is. There's the dress from Nordstrom I was looking at, or the gym shoes from the sporting goods store. It's the exact pair. Is it okay if they know, obviously, that I'm looking. How do they know, and should I click on the little pop-up?
Now, you never click on pop-ups. You always go to the companies that sell directly. It's just the ads follow you around. So they actually drop cookies on your computer, and they follow you around, so they know what you looked at. We always suggest, the Better Business Bureau suggests, rather, is clear your cookies.
How often should you clear your history?
You can actually have them every time you exit. You can clear the cookies. So there's in the Windows environment, I'm not sure about Mac, but in the Windows environment, there's a box that you can check that every time you exit, it clears all your cookies. I say daily, because this way they track you, they know where you're going. But the only thing about that, it erases all your passwords. And
I know,
your
and then you got to type in all the passwords. Then you have to remember all your passwords.
It's truly safer that way. I'd rather you do that as well than check with the Better Business Bureau first and get our reports and check reviews with the Better Business Bureau as well, because we're really into customer reviews now. And if you know good business, go to Better Business Bureau and leave them a great review as well, because we're so interested in helping people find businesses that they can trust.
And that's important too. Yeah, if you have a great experience,
tell us know. Let others know as well, because it's important. There's a lot of great businesses out there. I'm not trying to say that there's bad actors in every industry, and I know every industry. I can tell you there's a bad actor in every one of them. You can't tell the difference. They look the same, they dress the same, they're criminals, and you can't tell.
Absolutely. Steve, thank you so much for hanging out. And again, bbb.org/Chicago,
and then look for my email address for Steve Burness, and we'll give you a free webcam cover if you're a listener to the show.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
My
and
pleasure.
We will talk very soon. We won't wait this as long next time.
Right. Before you buy or hire,
BBB it. Steve Burness. More after this on WGN. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Hello world.
Oh,
song.
Come on,
sing.
Play Aretha.
Come on, get happy.
One more Aretha.
Okay, hold on a second.
Okay. I do like this song, but come on, it's Aretha Day. You got to celebrate the Queen of Soul. Should I stall a little more?
Yes.
All right, you can play the happy song again. Now that you're on a completely different website, a completely different page. Okay, Elizabeth Alfano is coming up next. You sounded fantastic last night. You're back again for more. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Take it away. Me too. Oh, God. I absolutely love Aretha and Annie Lennox.
Together.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Michael. Yay, get another Aretha song. We've been playing, Mike put together, he was in early today putting in all this Aretha music, so we've been playing it all day.
So I heard you ask some of your other guests, what is your favorite Aretha song?
Mine has to be, I love R-E-S-P-E-C-T, but I...
R-E-S-P-E-C-T!
Yeah. Oh, Michael, you're just
Why are you doing this to us?
I keep making them play all the songs. I'm like, no, go back to it. Because he wants me to talk and hit my break on time instead of listening to Aretha. Would that make you happy?
You know what? Aretha makes me happy tonight.
Is that your happy thought tonight?
This is my happy thing tonight.
Okay, that's going to be my happy thing tonight, too. What makes you happy, Elizabeth, before we turn it over to you?
Oh, my animals. My pets, for sure. I love them. Oh, yes.
Very cool.
Yes. I mean, many things make me happy. There are many. I could go on. There's a long list of beautiful things. I got to tell you.
Yes.
Yesterday, I came to the WGN studios.
Yes.
Seeing the fireworks.
Oh, wasn't that cool?
I rolled through. God, it's beautiful.
I know. And we have a beautiful view of it.
Oh, my word. It is stellar here, you guys. Really.
It is.
It's just stunning.
We love having you. We've been celebrating Aretha. We want to thank everybody for tonight. Dean Richards spent a lot of time with us talking about Aretha Franklin in the 7 o'clock hour. We had some wonderful jazz musicians here tonight previewing Jazz Fest for next weekend. Iron Woman Paralympian Mary Kate Callahan. One of the most inspirational people that we've ever met. She was with us. And, of course, WTS Summer Program CEO Brenda Langstad, Ronna Borey was here, Steve Burness, and you. And, of course, our theater troupe from ConFest. So we had a jam-packed show tonight.
Holy cow. How many hours were you here?
We've been here since 7.
My word, girl.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Well, you're still looking good. I got to say, you hold it together 4 hours later.
Oh, God. You too for 11 o'clock. Tell us what's coming up on your show tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Well, just like you, I've got 2 jam-packed hours. So my first hour, I've got Dr. Carla Hightower and Johnny Juicer. So both of them were on the bad health plan, if you will, and they reeled themselves back in, and they're now both plant-based.
So
they're going to talk about how they kind of reeled their lifestyle back in and what are the benefits. And what were the tricks and how hard was it and if they had any obstacles. So they both have really great personal stories. And then in the second hour, we'll have Chef Kevin Shooter and Jenny Plasterer. So Jenny owns Kitchen 17. You remember I was here with her pizza. So
her pizza
good.
Was fantastic.
I brought in that pizza. So, so good.
Did you bring it now?
Well, she's coming in at midnight. Well, you want more pizza, huh?
No, I just want to support your guest.
Right, you do. And they are actually going to open a restaurant together. So he is the Fancy Plants caterer. He has his own catering company. And she has Kitchen 17, but they're opening something new in Lakeview.
Ooh, very cool. So, we'll tune in to Elizabeth. She is coming up next, and we'll be back after this to close it out on 720 WGN.
Faith.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me.
Thank you, Michael. Michael Heidemann, the great. Awesome job producing. Thank you so much. It's been such a fun week with you, Michael. Thank you for all of your hard work. I know you were here super early getting Aretha ready for us, so thank you for appeasing me.
Total pleasure.